see the did you see the one preview with Eddie Izzard where he's talking about you love killing people, Gunther? How great is that?
It's pretty good.
That's pretty funny, right?
Eric Roberts is very good in it as well.
He's fantastic. He's really, really good.
Happy birthday, Matt.
Thanks, Alex. I miss you, buddy. I haven't seen you around lately.
I know. Work sucks.
That and you go to this lake house with your uncle every weekend now.
Yeah, well.
Stabbing cabin.
What? Yeah, when did this start happening? What's with this lake house every weekend? I got my one friend who go to the boat every fucking weekend, like they're big spackhones. Now I got this guy who thinks he's
a
45-year-old man who has a lake house and goes every weekend with the wife and kids. And Lenny's got bad gas going, I think, from the Chinese.
Is it the meatloaf or the Chinese?
The meatloaf from a week ago.
No, seriously.
I know. How's Dean doing? Dean Anderson, who helps us out. Go ahead, give him a plug for his company.
He doesn't want a plug.
He doesn't want a plug?
No, he just like, you know.
He hates us that much?
No, he loves us. Midwest Conference Service.
Okay. All right, he's done our banners, and Dean's a great guy, and he's helped us out a lot. I appreciate it. Leonard, you want to sit down? I want to talk about this Chinese food. People are interested. They're really not, but they're interested. We had amazing Chinese food for dinner. Well, with my diabetes now, and with my other health problems, well, I can have Chinese food. It's stir fry. No deep fry. Nothing. No sugars. I can eat a lot of protein and vegetables, and that's what this was. So I had some Hunan beef. I had some Peking-style spicy pork, and I had, Leonard, what was the other thing we had?
Chicken and lemon sauce.
No, you had that.
So that's what the doctor said, is you've got diabetes?
Yeah, I got the diabetes, and I got some other issues, too, that I don't want to speak about on the air so I never get laid again. Right. Now, Charles,
Happy birthday.
Thank you,
Mr.
Leonard.
Matthew Aaron.
Thank you, Len.
Happy 29 years.
I look at this.
You're probably not going to reach 30. How's your love tentacle?
Yeah. Black.
I feel like this low testosterone stuff that's going on
SOS.
Is karma. This is karma for all the times that we've gone to bars and I've introduced Chuck to women as, hi, this is Chuck, he has IBS.
He's no.
So say it on the
say
radio.
It the way, say it the way.
I already got the karma.
Say it the way you really say. He's got the IBS.
It's more like, hey, you. This is Chuck.
Lenny, strip club.
The IBS. Lenny! Yeah.
That was the night the cab cut through a hospital parking lot to get rid of us faster. Through the ambulance entrance.
Children's Memorial.
I've never seen a cab want to get rid of three people that bad ever.
Oldie. Lenny just goes on there and goes, I'm turning oldies on and turns his Hindu crap and puts on oldies. And like seven of us, like a bunch of idiots, hopped in a circus car, started singing at the top of our lungs. We're all plastered. We're all singing the wrong lyrics.
But we weren't drinking and driving.
By the way, how funny was it? He didn't just drive through a hospital to get rid of us. He flew through a hospital to get rid of us. I mean, he was going 30 miles per hour in a hospital garage, in a children's hospital garage, just to get rid of us.
Yeah, it definitely would have been a scene from a night.
Oh, thank God this kicked in.
My health insurance? It's been kicked in, thank you.
I remember when I got this. Do you pay for this yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a PPO?
Yes, PPO.
How much does that run you per year?
Do you even want to know?
Mine, I think, is around 14 or 12.
Over 2.
Jesus Christ.
Over 2. But it covers a lot.
Welcome.
I'm well covered.
I don't know what happened to my welcome packet.
Adam found out today, our sound guy, Adam, who can't be with us tonight.
Why not? On your
birthday. Well, you know, that's personal information. And I'm usually good about giving out everyone's personal information on the air, but I've been pretty loyal to Adam about that. Adam's kept a lot of my dirty secrets throughout the years.
Doing a colon cleaning?
It no. Is. I just remember the first time Chuck hung out with me and Adam.
I hated you two.
Speaking of dirty secrets.
I wanted to talk to either one of you two again.
And Chuck has no problem talking about the mass amounts of booze and drugs Adam and I did that night. So, but Adam doesn't talk about that because he has loyalty and respect for my career in life.
And the
snuff film. It wasn't a real snuff film.
What the fuck is wrong with you guys?
It was like an 8mm like movie. It was a movie.
This was all the first night. Oh. It was also the night we ran from Wiener Circle because he.
Well, it's not technically the first night we hung out. Technically, the first night we hung out, we were at a luchador wrestling event. I was wearing my cowboy hat. Now, this was the first time we hung out. Now, Chuck and I saw each other numerous times before that, and I guess we just we just decided we had no interest in talking to each other. I remember I used to talk to Ed before I talked to you. That's how I met you, through Ed, because Ed and I would always chat up at the independent wrestling functions.
That is correct.
And Tony, and my cowboy hat.
By the way, Tony, cowboy hat
everywhere.
I thought he was like 37 years old, and he wanted
told
to hang
you,
out
with me. Oh, Len, you're one to talk. You know how many people walk up to me and would be you'd be honored to hear that you're 37.
And I'm like, why does this 37-year-old want to hang out with an 18-year-old?
29. At the time, I was like 20.
I know. And at the time, somebody was like egging me on. He's like, yeah, he's like 35. And I'm like, that's freaking crazy.
I was going for the Vince Neil thing back then.
Then I saw you at college, and I was like, holy shit.
And then we went to somewhere that night. Whose house did we go to that night? And Big Time was there. Kirby Duck.
Oh.
All right. Let him have a ginger cookie, for fuck's sake. Almond cookie? Oh, no, he doesn't want one. Now you made him not want it.
I'm going to bite that.
So anyways, Alan Spencer will be joining us now that we're catching up on our old days here.
Our water's not cold anymore.
The water's not cold anymore? It's not warm. Oh, yeah, that sounds real good.
Chuck's mic needs to go up.
People want to hear Chuck, and I'm getting feedback that Chuck's a little low. He's got his NPR voice going.
Hello, and welcome to NPR.
Have you found
that's why no one listens to it. They can't hear NPR.
Have you found a new job yet?
No, I have not.
Macy's didn't happen?
Macy's wasn't even hiring. They were just interviewing the interview.
So really?
I wasted my time.
Probably trying to...
Wait, Macy's had you come in just for a bullshit interview?
Yep.
They have to keep their HR department working for something.
Is that what it is?
Probably. Who knows?
And they have to interview so many minorities.
So how good was that pork, Leonard?
Pork was outstanding.
Chuck's not a minority. what is that? No, we can't pass
he's
for Mexicans.
Oh, he's a fuck up.
No, if he's a fuck up, that means he's in the majority, Leonard, not the minority. That means you and I are in the minority. Successes.
Both living at home with our parents.
Roommates. I have three roommates.
It just so happens Leonard's roommates shine his jewelry late at night while he sleeps. He's got good roommates.
I have three roommates. Two of them think they're the boss. One of them thinks he owns the place. That's all I'm saying.
Well, the one that thinks she owns the place doesn't.
No, she's
like fourth in line.
Yeah. She thinks she owns the place.
Alan Spencer's new show, Bullet in the Face. I got to tell you. Okay, so here's what it reminds me of. I'm watching this fucking thing, man. All right, so we went to see that Dark Knight Rises like 2 weeks ago, right? Yeah. And by the way, what are we seeing tomorrow night? Oh, midnight movie, Expendables. Are we doing Expendables 2 tomorrow night?
I got bocce first, so as long as I get
at midnight.
It'd be Thursday.
You have bocce ball tomorrow?
Tournament, yep.
At midnight?
No.
They don't have lights at bocce ball courts. I think you'll be done by then. You'll be done.
Do you have to show your ARP card to get in there?
Wait, where's this at? Where's this bocce ball at?
It's up in Franklin Park at a place. No, we're going to Franklin Park.
At what place?
A private club.
Oh, it's a private club. Are you going to make the midnight movie? Expendables 2?
Well, Matt, today's Tuesday, so.
No, today's Wednesday, Chuck.
Oh, that's right. Shoot.
Dude, you threw me for a loop because I was thinking.
I was nervous right now.
I did that at work today, too.
Yeah, right.
I was telling somebody, I was like, yeah, we got a meeting in 2 days. And they're like, no, we don't. I'm like, no, it's in 2 days.
Well, okay,
so
good to know we are all very well screwed up. Pat Tobias sent me a link that I should play. No. You may remember this from last year. This is from last year.
Wait, make sure I'm plugged in.
The same date.
I'm not plugged in.
I am good.
this is my good friend Dina Martin.
Really?
I told
When's your birthday?
It was yesterday. I know yours is in a few days, correct?
Yes. So you're a fellow Leo.
Yes, I am. We share similar birthdays. And I told my booker, I go, I want Dina Martin for my birthday.
Well, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Aaron. Matthew Aaron. Happy birthday to you.
That was pretty good.
Oh.
That was great.
Little Bulba
in there, too. I love her, though. I'm in love. I don't think Alan Spencer's doing that for me today, though. I don't think there's any happy birthday singing going on.
I think we should ask him to.
Alan.
It should be, and he has to do it in a low, sexy voice.
Oh, he can pull that off. Alan's got that low.
Happy birthday.
Matthew Aaron.
So anyways, I watched Bullet in the Face, okay? All right. First of all, the cast is great, as I talked about. Eddie Izzard and Eric Roberts. Kate Kelton's in it. She's phenomenal. Max Williams plays Gunter Vogler. He's great. Neil Napier. Real good cast. Okay, so anyways, this show is like, we went to see Dark Knight Rises. Imagine that world, except the good guy is the Joker. Like, he's insane. He's the Joker, the hero of the show. And, it's like Chris Nolan's Batman world, except really fucked up. It looks beautiful. It looks like it's a fucking $100 million TV show. It's probably one millionth of that. So, yeah, it's a really good show. It's on IFC. You can catch it tomorrow night. Three episodes tomorrow night, and then three episodes Friday night. And then when you're done with the three episodes tomorrow night, you can meet Leonard and I at the Quarry to see Expendables 2.
I may have to go to that, too.
Is this?
Oh, Charles is going to go to a midnight flick?
I'm to the point where I just don't care.
Wow.
You've been at that point for a long time.
But when he's going to see Expendables 2 at midnight, that's the new low.
Yeah.
He's reached. You just want to get fired.
Did you not hear that I went to an interview at Macy's last week? I think that was the new low. I think Macy's is a great company.
Okay. I know Alan Spencer's on the show and we're talking Bullet in the Face, but Expendables 2. The first one was what it was, but the second one, come on, that cast.
Oh, I just want to see.
And I heard Nick Cage is in the third one. I heard Nick Cage is in the third one, and they're trying to get Harrison Ford and someone else, too.
Harrison Ford still has a career, though.
Sly still has a career. Schwarzenegger's got like four movies coming out.
Statham was just in a movie.
Have you ever seen Statham's movies? I have not. I have not seen the Transporters one.
You just
30.
Don't like British people.
I don't.
He was very good in Snatch.
I was jealous because I got the Olympics.
You know, Snatch is one of those movies I never got into.
Either did I.
I didn't get into
it. I'm like, it's not that good.
They were trying to be Italian.
Yep.
And he was the only good thing in The Italian Job.
Ed Norton?
Ed
Norton was good too.
That movie's name was very deceptive.
Why?
The Italian Job, I thought it was about something totally different.
Italian?
You thought it was about a cannoli bakery.
It's the Italian Job. You work in a bakery.
So anyways, it's Expendables 2. Come on. I haven't seen a Chuck Norris movie in
77 years.
Yeah. It's time. And Jean-Claude's the bad guy.
Remember those internet things about Chuck Norris?
Oh, Chuck Norris, yeah.
Whatever happened to those?
Well, yeah, Sly may have signed him like a couple years past his peak, but good for him. And Jean-Claude, as everyone knows, I see all Jean-Claude straight to DVD stuff, so this is exciting.
I liked him in Street Fighter.
Don't forget.
Hold on. I was just about to agree with you and blow him with you, but Street Fighter was god awful, but I love Raul
Julia. Oh, he was great.
Raul Julia is great.
The day that General Bison came into your village was the greatest moment of your life. For me, it was a Tuesday. I find that funny.
I've never heard anyone ever quote Street Fighter. That's like when Steve Weirich used to do the show and quote Blossom. And you're like, who quotes Blossom?
No, but
Raul
Julia, I was a fan of his. Adam's Family, everything.
Adam's Family was great. The first and the
young.
Second one.
He did Romero. Was it Romero about that bishop in Bolivia or El Salvador?
Oh, no, the one with Robert Redford? He did some Cuban movie with Robert Redford that was really good.
But he died young.
The scene I love in Adam's Family Values, the second one,
when he's
is
the
when they go to the police station. That's a great scene. If you haven't seen Adam's Family in years, I definitely suggest catching up with those two movies. They hold up.
They do.
And if you saw them young and you haven't seen them since you were young, they're even funnier when you're older. Like, there's so much humor I didn't get.
Joan Cusack was the MC.
Yeah, she was the bad guy in the second one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Christopher Lloyd.
In the first one. It was Christopher Lloyd and Dan Hedaya.
He's the writer on that show, Modern Family, isn't he? Or he's
no, that's a different Christopher Lloyd.
Is it really?
I know, you were really hoping it was
Back to the Future,
Chris.
I thought it was, no, Taxi.
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, you didn't like Back to the Future?
No, the Doc, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, it's all right. Back to the Future. It's all right.
It's all right.
You know, that's what else I liked about Bullet in the Face, though. It has a very futuristic vibe to it.
Is this season one? It's on right now?
This is going to be... It's a six-episode series.
Mini-series? Okay.
I don't know if it's a mini-series. We're going to talk to Alan about if there's going to be more of them. But
like political animals, I like to see more of for some reason.
Come on.
I'm just... You know what? I'll tell you right now.
Look, my buddy Rod Lurie talks about that show, but he's friends with the creator, so I don't trust a word out of his mouth about it. I saw Political Animals myself. I saw one episode. It was, and I love Sigourney Weaver. I love her. Like, anyone that knows me knows I will bend over backwards for Sigourney Weaver. The show's no good.
I got kicked out for the political thing. I'm a big Hillary Clinton fan.
What part of the... But, okay, do you like the show just because it's political?
No,
Suits because it's about lawyers?
Suits, I think, is a funny show.
I actually hear Suits is good.
No, but in Political Animals, I do get a kick out of it because it is... I read this article in Foreign Policy magazine. I think I'm the only person out there that reads the fucking thing. But literally...
Yeah, they make it just for you.
It was ripped. Like, almost that script was... Whatever was ripped right out of this article.
Yeah, but like I told
about
you...
About her... position.
I told you my problem with that show.
Her approval rating's in the upper 60s.
It is the much lesser sequel. It's the much lesser sequel to Primary Colors. That's what
fair,
that show
yeah,
is.
Okay, fair. Primary Colors, great movie.
Phenomenal movie.
Bulworth, not so much, but great song. Ghetto Superstar.
You liked one scene in Bulworth? Why didn't you like Bulworth?
You know, I'm not that big of a Warren Beatty fan. Beatty.
Bugsy?
Dick Tracy.
I love Dick Tracy. Awesome. That's one of the best movies ever.
They want to do a remake of that. You can't because that is so hard. That's
they
like
won't
a
do a
remake.
Warren Beatty owns the rights to it.
Does he really?
Yeah, the only way they'd make a remake of that is if they like took it out of his dead hands, which sooner or later could happen.
Actually, no, you're right. Bugsy was good, too.
Bugsy was good.
Bugsy was good.
You just don't like the Jewish mob.
Oh, please. They weren't. The other two were Italian.
So, yeah, but there was the Jewish mob, too.
They were together.
I know, but you and Terzo always are talking about how the Jewish mob's much lesser than the Italian mob. Or was it just Terzo that was telling
Maybe
me
Maybe it was just Terzo.
We got into a fight last week.
What
he
mob?
Goes,
what mob?
He goes, why do Jewish people think they're just like Italian people? And I go, well, Terzo, you know, we have
Dice Clay then.
You know, Terzo.
No,
we have
actually,
a,
it's not just it's not Jewish.
We have a bunch of
it's
similar
every
stereotypes.
Every person out there that is not Italian
no.
longs to be Italian.
No, but
deep
you got to admit, Jewish people and Italian people have a lot of the similar stereotypes.
Yeah, overbearing mothers.
Right. So my point was, and I said to him, we both had pretty high-powered mobs, and he goes, who told you that? And you know how Terzo is. He's a homer for Italia. He even bought an Italia hat at Italian Fest. I don't know how a hat could fit his
did
fucking
fit?
Melon.
I was just going to say, did it fit?
No.
It was one of those stretchy ones, right?
But he
like
was...
give out a free night at the ball game.
But he was fighting with me about how the Jewish mob was nothing. I go, did you see Bugsy?
Wait, where were we originally talking about? The miniseries?
Plus, you got to love Bugsy because it shows the creation of Vegas.
Oh!
And as Vegas fans.
That's the other thing. New Boardwalk Empire starring. New Boss is starting.
What?
Wait, Boss or Boardwalk?
I can't watch Boss. I haven't seen it. Too close to life. I hate it.
Actually, the show is not.
It may be closer to his life.
If you're from Chicago, you have a different appreciation for it, though, because they do cite some of like the current political ongoing. It's just pretty good.
Remember Kenny Williams was in the pilot?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, no, did you see the new show come out, Chicago Fire?
Yeah, it's from Dick Wolf, who did Law and Order.
Did you see, though, Rahm Emanuel's cameo in that?
Yeah.
you do realize that they're all trying to take away the firefighters' pensions. Obviously, this isn't too true to life, then. Yeah.
Well, Rom's trying to so, Rom's trying to look.
Well, it's not
good.
Just Rom. It's very.
I've given up on Boardwalk Empire. I'm done with it.
Really?
I don't like it.
Really?
Yeah.
I still
thank
appreciate
you,
it. I still
somebody.
Like it.
Somebody.
The first season I thought started
it's no off, Sopranos.
No, not at all.
Thank you.
But it's not trying to be. The first season I thought
it's
was
trying to
started
be.
Out very good, and it kind of went down.
I've never seen
the
it.
Second season I thought started very boring and slow. Kind of built its way up, and then the last couple episodes were just snorefests.
So wait, the last couple episodes when he starts banging his mother, that was a shock.
Okay, here's why I watch Bullet in the Face. Yeah, but this
yeah,
is
no shit. It
let
was.
Me tell you something. I watch Bullet in the Face over Boardwalk Empire because everyone's like, you're watching all these shows before Boardwalk. I can't
is
do
that
those.
Yeah, because you have Spencer on and not Steve Buscemi, or
that's part of it. That's part of it. I'm friends with Alan and not
Steve. Okay. Oh, the other thing. Your quote today was outstanding.
Which quote was that?
The Leo McGarry quote.
Oh.
Because when I'm reading that, I'm like, this is West Wing. All of a sudden, as I get there, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great quote.
That's about him being the alcoholic.
I thought you meant my love tentacle quote was great.
No, was that a quote? Who the fuck said
no,
that? That's
me.
That was you. Well, I don't find you very original.
That was a Jerry Maguire quote.
That was a Jerry Maguire quote.
Love tentacle. Yeah, I remember when Jonathan Lipnicki walked up to Tom Cruise and goes, what's wrong with my love tentacle?
Cuba started overacting in the corner.
Oh, come on. Cuba's great. Didn't you see Boat Trip?
Didn't you get a little
yes,
with me?
With you.
That was hysterical.
We saw it in theaters.
Oh, I wouldn't go that low.
We did. It was quite a bad movie night.
No, we saw The Watch, which was pretty fucking bad.
You know what? Can I honestly say? I'm going to go out on a limb here. Boat Trip with Cuba Gooding Jr.
is worse than.
Is better than
oh,
The Watch.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, then I'm not.
Arnie Legg. Not Arnie Legg. Oh,
Horatio Sanz and Roger Moore.
Well, no, when he starts running down the hallway. Yeah.
That's got a killer cast. Arnie Legg is in it because him and Will Ferrell are the gay lovers
that's
at the
right,
travel
that's
agency.
Right.
And Vivica A. Fox. I mean, that's got a... And then, what's her name? Who plays the love interest?
Well, obviously that formula.
The girl from Without a Trace.
Oh, my God. Well, obviously that formula didn't work for The Watch, because that was just gone.
The Watch was terrible.
Yeah.
Maybe if The Watch was more about gays, it would have been funny.
I doubt it.
No, it just sucked. Well, the campaign started off pretty funny.
And I
the end got
you know what
slow.
I talked to Mike today and
got a little too preachy.
Yeah, Binder and I were talking and if you throw all the preacher stuff aside, all the preaching aside, the problem with the campaign was it started out okay, and then the second half is just like
it's
an hour and 20 minutes, but
right.
It feels like 2.5 hours.
It does. But that first half is that gritty, dirty comedy.
It's really funny the
that
first
you expect
half, I thought.
Out of you know Gelf, the Hangover crew, the old school crew.
And I'm hearing this from a lot of people. I'm hearing they're getting tired of Will Ferrell playing Will Ferrell.
I am, and I'm sick of Zach Galifianakis playing the same character all the time.
No, Galifianakis played something he's never played before in the campaign.
Okay, well I haven't seen it so.
Len. Galifianakis was acting on the campaign.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will admit I've not seen Bored to Death. And I heard
I don't like Bored to Death. It's not my
but
favorite
Will
show.
Will Ferrell plays the same role all the time now. Zach Galifianakis, pretty much the same thing. I don't really want to see it.
Campaign's not on your list.
Nope.
But The Expendables 2, tomorrow at midnight.
Yep.
Tomorrow. We are there. I bet this is going to be our most popular midnight showing ever. I bet we'll have two or three people with us.
Bigger than the third week showing of Dark Knight.
Oh, Dark Knight. Well, who went with us then? Alex and Terzo.
Ted, I think, was the funniest movie we've seen this year, though.
Or as Terzo likes to tell real Italian people that he's around, Terzo.
Terzo. Terzine.
But, you know, have you ever noticed, by the way, I just want to bring this up. Have you ever noticed, by the way, that our friends, we have a lot of friends who are half Italian, but they love that.
They drop a
like
one in front of it.
Yeah.
And now they're 150% Italian.
Yeah, that's the best way
I
to put
object,
it.
I would object, but I'm guilty of it. I do. I ignore my Irish. I don't know. Who wants to be
I
Irish?
Would, too. I would. In this day and age.
I believe Alan Spencer's calling in. Mr. Spencer, are you there?
I am here.
Alan, how you doing, pal?
Fine. How are you?
I could be better. I could be worse.
Well, that's true of all of us in the United States, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would say. Okay, I got to tell you, I've been talking Bullet in the Face while talking like 50 other topics. This show is, I told you this between you and me, but it's the most original show I have seen in years. It's the best show I've seen since Breaking Bad. It's a great show. It's great.
Well, that's very flattering. It's a polarizing show. You know, just before calling in here, I was reading one review from Columbus that the guy said it was the strangest thing he's ever watched, but he did praise it. And then I read another review where a woman was upset. She actually came to the screening of I screened three episodes over the weekend for a live audience, and it went really well. And she was expecting it to be like Sledgehammer. She loved Sledgehammer, and she was horrified by the violence and some of the subject matter, some of the places it went, and it really upset her. So it's been a polarizing. She says the darkest sitcom she ever saw, so that made me happy. I personally don't think it's the most violent sitcom ever made.
I don't either.
Two and a Half Men, but if you count behind the scenes. It's drawing this polarizing response, but you know what? That's what I expected. That's what I'd hoped for. It's not for everybody, but I'm glad it's for you.
Well, let me bring up, here's one review that you were quoting the Boston Globe. This is a show that wouldn't have been made before Quentin Tarantino infused screen violence with wit, but there's as much zany Mel Brooks and bullet in the face as there is Tarantino. Now, let me ask you this. Let's go through your past a little bit here, Alan. You have a Mel Brooks past.
I do.
So let's talk about that a little, and does any of that influence bullet in the face?
Probably influences all my comedy, though I've gone in a different direction of darker sort of things. Mel has himself said he doesn't do black comedy. He likes people too much. He says it's kind of light blue. But I do go into darkness. Jim Abrams from the Airplane.
Yep.
Troika, is a good friend of mine. And he said many times that he just can't understand why he perceives me as the nicest guy in the world, and then when I sit down to write things, it's this pitch black stuff, and it's disturbing to him. He says, why does a nice guy like you have such a horrible view of the world? And I said, maybe it's the way the world treats nice guys. But this has always been sort of my sense of humor. If you're asking about the lineage of Mel Brooks,
yeah, that's really interesting.
Smart as a kid, and wound up working with all those people, and of course it's part of urban legend and Wikipedia, which is true, that when I was a kid, I snuck onto the set of Young Frankenstein and first met Mel there. And then subsequently, years later, after Sledgehammer, I co-created a show with him, and he's a very good friend, certainly, of mine now.
That's great. What I love about when you talk about Young Frankenstein on the internet, and one day you'll have to show me this in person, but you got color photos from the set of Young Frankenstein, which I think are awesome because it's a black and white movie, and it's one of the most iconic black and white films because it was made during an age where you didn't have to make black and white movies. And these color photos that you've shared on the internet, they're fantastic. It's great movie history.
It is, and you know what was very amazing about seeing the film in 1974 when it came out? I had spent a lot of time on the set, so obviously I'd seen it the way you just saw in those photos that took you by surprise. I saw it in color. So when I saw it in black and white and technically aged to look like one of those vintage Universal horror films, I was stunned. And it showed the true genius of it all. I don't know how many people know it or if it's been talked about, but the soundtrack of the film, the actual scoring of the music was even recorded in the same fashion as those old movies, like with an overhead hanging microphone. So they really nailed it. So it was almost like this strange, disorienting time travel thing that went on when I was watching it. And it was quite fascinating. It was one of the first indoctrinations I had into the magic of the movies.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to bring up about your past, you know, and we'll talk about Sledgehammer too in a bit, but you were known as one of Hollywood's biggest, best script doctors. Could you explain where that reputation comes from, and is there any way you could talk about the scripts that you've doctored?
Not really, because it wouldn't be fair, because I don't talk about things unless I incept them,
mm-hmm.
It's difficult to talk about. It'd be like a plumber naming every home where he fixed a drain or things like that. I mean, I've done movies with stars like Mel Gibson, been around, big names, Hilary Swank. The only thing I will say is if you look on some movies and it says special thanks at the end, that might give you a clue. But I actually sign confidentiality agreements and agree not to arbitrate, nor would I, because I don't feel comfortable putting on my name on something unless I really 100% accepted it. So I was like a pinch hitter and would come in and fix various things. And actually that's how Bolt in the Face came around, because there was a pre-existing idea and I just sort of fix things for a living. But you know what I like about it is a stress-free life, because you know from all the filmmakers and creative people you interview, it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And not being personally on the line, I described this and it's true. There was a director who was literally throwing up when his preview didn't go well, and I calmed him down and just said, don't worry, it'll be okay and we'll make it better. But I don't have anything emotionally invested in it. I'm kind of a hitman coming in trying to make hit movies. And that led to a stress-free life for me, because I didn't enjoy development and all the rejection and all the headaches that come with dealing with that. So I enjoyed that life, but now I'm back front and center and getting offers again to do my own material and develop my own projects. I'm going to stay that course now.
That's great. I do want to bring up another example. I was reading Chris Farley's autobiography that his brothers wrote, and Tim Meadow and a bunch of other people included in it. And after Beverly Hills Ninja, Chris was in the bathroom with Bernie Brillstein, who is this big-time manager, used to run Brillstein and Gray with Brad Gray.
He was my manager.
He was. Bernie was your manager?
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing. And we'll talk about him in a second, because there's interesting stories there, I'm sure. But Chris was crying in the bathroom after Beverly Hills Ninja, and Bernie had to calm him down. He said it was like the worst thing he ever did, and he thought it was going to ruin his career.
Wound up being a hit, I recall. I think it made money.
Yeah, but there's just so much stress when the movie has your name on it. You're right. But then you decided you were going to put up with that stress to do Bullet in the Face. So why? What made Bullet in the Face so special for you that you're like, all right, I'm going to get front and center for this, and I'm going to take the lumps, and I'm also going to take the great reviews that you've been getting, though. Hey, to be honest, any negative review I read all basically says to watch the show, though, because of how original it is. Or how weird it is.
Yes, they're having trouble categorizing it. A lot of people are calling it a parody and a spoof, which it really isn't. And the people that are giving it good reviews are just reacting to what they're seeing, which is a dark comedy. But they're having trouble trying to categorize it, and they go into the spoof mode, and it's certainly not that. And it's probably because I did Sledgehammer, which was called a spoof, even though it's stylistically a different form than the parodies that people talk about now. Get Smart was rooted in character and plot, and that's what Sledgehammer had. And it's actually what Mel Brooks' films have, because his only, quote-unquote, parody or spoof movies ever to have Oscar nominations for performance and writing. So there's a lot more verisimilitude going on. But, you know, I did the problem with me is that I got lucky early on. I got jaded because Sledgehammer was the first pilot I wrote, and it went to, you know, it was shot, it went to series. I have creative autonomy and a lot of critical acclaim for it. That's very difficult to give up, because that's not really the real world. The immediate things that I worked on after, I didn't have the same amount of freedom. And so as a young person, it was very hard for me to adjust to the corporate mentality, to the nitpicking, to the factory mentality that most people work in, and the negotiations that something comes on the screen if it even resembles 30% of your original idea, that's considered a good thing. So it was really after I did two pilots in a row for the same network that they supposedly loved and they didn't put them on that I really had it. And don't forget one thing, you know, every studio makes a lot of movies every year, and invariably, whether they're good or bad, they all come out. But a network makes all these pilots, and they don't all go to series. They don't all air. And it's not because some of them aren't good. Some of them are fabulous. But it's just an unfair system, or they'll say, we have no need for this, or they buy something else. It's very mercurial. And so for somebody who actually mostly invests in their projects and has some pride and just doesn't do this for the money, it can be pretty maddening and frustrating. So I did the Script Doctor life, but then when the Sledgehammer DVDs came out and sold really well and sold well internationally, they started pursuing me to come back to develop again. And the same thing was happening. The same networks, they weren't making the projects. I even did one with Jim Abrams that didn't go. But then IFC was calling, and this is the first time I'd worked for cable. This is, you know, because it's always been the network thing. But they called, and it was a friend there named Dan Pasternak, who I've known a long time. And I basically agreed to come in and help with this concept for an action comedy you know, as a favor to him. And I threw everything out, and the only sliver of it I kept was that a bad guy becomes a cop, and I kept that he was German. That's literally it. And then I just kind of indulged myself and kind of created this fantasy graphic novel world and had fun with it. I didn't imagine it really going, and I got a call from IFC saying, we're not going to make this pilot. And I went, oh, okay. And, you know, I assumed that they liked the script, but they said, we're not going to make this pilot. They said, we're going to take it straight to series if you'll write them all. If you'll write all six, we're going to give you a six-episode order. So that just doesn't happen. And so that's how it wound up, me being front and center again on this thing.
I want to get into all that, but I did want to ask, we were wondering now, is this a full series, or is there a possibility for a second season or third season, depending on ratings?
I don't really know. Everything in TV depends on ratings. I'm sure they'd make a Hatfields and McCoy too if they could figure out a way to certainly do it. I approached it as six. I approached it as a limited run, so I just jam-packed it with everything that I could think of and created an ending that's either ambiguous or it can certainly end like that. I kind of used the Patrick McGoohan classic The Prisoner as kind of a role model, because that's a series that was always a limited run and continued fascinating people. You know, I was told sometimes, well, why don't you save something for, you know, if it's a second season? And I just kind of go for broke. I didn't want to save anything. So
right. We'll
see what happens. You know, everything in TV is contingent on the ratings, but I'm fine with it either way.
Now, let me ask you about this, because I heard rumors throughout the course of the production, pre, during, post, that there was some tension while filming this. Can you speak to that? Is that all just gossip on the internet, or was it really kind of a difficult thing to make this show? Was there some pushback from the network? Was there some what was going on when you were filming this?
Where you heard about this on the internet, I take it, huh?
I did. I heard some internet gossip.
You can't say specifically what it is, so that I'm just not just kind of like addressing things in random. Is there anything specific, or?
I can specifically say that I don't know who from the network, but I heard the network was very, very scared about the direction this show was taking. And
well,
is that true?
Do we have a few minutes? Are we going to a commercial, or do we have a few extended minutes to talk about this?
If I say too much, I'm giving away a source. Is the only problem? But
okay. Well, let's see. First of all, we're shooting in Canada. We were shooting with Canadian companies, and that has a very different mindset. So, you know, all I can say is I think that. The network wanted to have a stylized look, so they hired a director that was, I guess, known for action, a stylized look, who doesn't do comedy and isn't proficient with it. He's kind of an action specialist, doesn't know comedy at all. So what I was encouraging was just to shoot this straight and to shoot it like any other action piece, and a current action piece would be a hard R rated sort of piece.
Right.
So the action is very visceral. And has more of a, I guess, a reality to it. Or, I mean, I've heard certain people liking it to Tarantino sort of things. But it was a difficult shoot, I will say that. There were a lot of things that went wrong. But you know what? Being a script doctor, being someone that thinks fast in his feet, I was able to salvage some things and rewrite constantly through the production so that we could keep going. So, but as far as the network, no other network would make a show like this.
Yeah.
And they have to be commended for that. Nothing that's iconoclastic that they ever do. And they've never wanted me to dumb it down. And they've had some concerns because they have their own kind of internal self-regulated broadcast standards. And you have to be sympathetic to that, because you do want to have sponsors for this thing. And, you know, Al-Qaeda is not a sponsor for a TV show, so you do want good sponsors for this sort of show. So there's no complaints or anything about them, but you're dealing with new territory, and it's very, very different, and it's, quote-unquote, an untraditional comedy. And they air sketch shows, and their other hit show, Portlandia, is a very gentle show, and this is not. So I think any time you do something that's this different, it requires a lot of explaining and a lot of discussion. And a lot of understanding maybe on both sides. And I think I'm not just giving a diplomatic answer.
Yeah.
I think I'm being truthful.
No. That's fair. What I was going to say, to be fair as well, is you and I talked a few weeks ago, and I felt like I'm like, you know, and I love Dan Pasternak. I love Dan. I think he's a great guy. He's one of the only network heads that'll give me the time of day. So let me just state that. And I was just like, where is the promotion for this show? Where is the marketing? And now, I will say this. The past 2 weeks, they really beefed it up.
Right.
I mean.
Well, you know what? The thinking of the movie business, and believe it or not, is the audience has ADD in a short attention span.
Yeah.
So they really don't pummel people until the final 2 weeks. That's
and they did.
Really what happens. I'm from a different era. You know, I'm adapting to the change of things. You know, there was no internet when Sledgehammer was on a cult show. People wrote letters and everything. So, and there was no DVRs. And this is a whole other different thing where also the aggregate ratings of Netflix and Amazon and iTunes factor into things. You know, when I look at the scheduling of the show, I also have to remember most people don't watch TV live anymore. They, you know, the number one rated network is a DVR. So, you know, without casting aspersions to them, IFC is a small network. They have limited funds, and the marketing dollars have to be used in a more creative way. And you know, they're scheduling this with action movies that kind of draw eyeballs to the week that we're on, Fight Club and Rambo, things that are perennials.
Right.
And so they created a theme week and able to advertise the show within that. But, you know, they have a billboard up in New York for it. Frankly, I think I've seen more promotion for this show than a couple others that they've done. And don't forget, some of the other shows that they've done are self-promoted because they already have comedians with a podcast and a following
right.
here. But I'm quite happy with the trailers and what they're doing, social media. And they're even doing some cross-promotion with other networks. Somebody has posted that they saw a commercial for us on Spike. So that's pretty good,
good
for IFC.
That's good. And I see it's Expendables 2 week on IFC, and they're kind of running this with the Expendables, which is a perfect match, I think.
It is, and I was really flattered. I like the Expendables. I like Eric Roberts is in our show is
yeah.
in the first Expendables, and I'm looking forward to Expendables 2. I like anything where people over 60 are creative mayhem, and I love all those action stars from the 80s, and I parodied action stars from the 80s, so it's sort of a perfect fit. But you know, go back to your question. I think that, you know, we seem pretty well positioned that people know we're there.
Yeah.
And of course,
good.
We're talking now, and that helps the cause, which I appreciate.
Oh, well, yeah. That's simple. You just got to ask me. I got all the time in the world. let me ask you about this, because now that we brought up Expendables 2, you were always talking about how much you love Sylvester Stallone. And by the way, everyone here, Chuck and I, we'd go out to bars and we would name every one of his movies ever made just because we were bored. So
I have a Rocky-inspired tattoo.
Yeah, well, don't show your true colors over there, Chuck. But Alan,
yes.
Do you have a relationship with Sly, or are you just a big supporter of his?
I'm just a big supporter of his. You know, David Rashi was in the movie Cobra with Stallone. So I know Stallone is aware of Sledgehammer. I've heard him make jokes and things like that. But I'm just a supporter of him. I'm a fan of the Rocky movies and the Rambo movies and just him. I thought the Rocky Balboa, what I like about Stallone is that he was an underdog when he started out, and then he made a comeback as an underdog again, because I thought Rocky Balboa was fabulous.
Yeah, I did too.
And so many people were laughing when they announced that movie. They laughed about both Rambo and Rocky Balboa.
Yep.
And then look what happened. They both connected. And the scene on Rocky Balboa when he talks to his son is just so superb and kind of a way to live your life. I found it very inspiring.
Sunshine and Rambo.
He was going to film bumpers or wraparounds for our week with the Expendables 2, and I was really hoping for that so I could go down there and talk to him, but it didn't work out, and of course he was beset by a tragedy,
yeah,
which is very, very sad. And he was on Good Morning America, and where a lot of celebrities, you know, wouldn't address it, he answered the question about what he was going through, and it was very inspiring. So I have a lot of respect for him, and I'm a big fan, and I'm glad you share that fandom. And I have fond memories of going to a drive-in to see Rambo First Blood 2, and we got really drunk with beer. We were in a van, and it's one of the few times I went to a drive-in and watched the whole movie. So it was a great, great, epic evening.
That's great. I love that sunshine and rainbow speech from Rocky Balboa, too. That's great. What I was going to bring up is, okay, you had a deep friendship or a good friendship with Andy Kaufman. What did you and Andy have in common?
Andy and myself?
Yes.
Bizarreness, I guess. interest in you know, sort of the childlike things. Andy was a child of television as well. Andy, basically, if you want to encapsulate what Andy Kaufman was like, Andy watched television and just basically crawled inside it and became part of it. You know, I certainly did that as a writer. I mean, if you look at my upbringing, it's sort of surreal. I'm watching Get Smart as a kid, and then lo and behold, I'm helping set up a Get Smart reunion movie and hobnobbing with Max in 99 and Leonard Stern, the exec producer, very good friend. So all the people that I've ever admired when I was a kid, I wound up working with or knowing personally. So Andy just had a devout love of the medium, Howdy Doody and Slim Whitman and all that sort of things. And I was very young on the lot when I met him, and he was relatively young too, even though he was starting on Taxi. But we just had the common denominator to talk about television and some of these aspects of it. He did invite me to his house to watch a marathon of The People's Court. He had hired someone. At that time, it was like 3/4 inch, and then they had VHS. But he had hired someone to record every day's episode of The People's Court, edit out the commercials. He was fascinated by watching it for when people would lose their temper, because it was real, and that he would fixate on. But he did invite me up there once, and we just started watching this, and then he drifted away, and I kind of had no escape. it went on and on. I couldn't find him, too. I left the room, and then it was kind of like Clockwork Orange. I didn't really have a choice but to come back and keep watching it, trying to figure out why I should watch so many hours of The People's Court.
I wonder, do you ever think that Andy was fucking with you when he wants you to watch that many hours of The People's Court?
I know he was. We had lunch once at Paramount, and he folded his hands together to save grace and close his eyes. And he did it, I think, at like an hour to 40 minutes or something. You know, he was in the PM and medication. I'm just sitting there waiting for him to come out of it. And then, of course, finally I moved my chair. He was going to get up and, you know, get something else to drink. And he could hear it, and then he came out of it. So, you know, so he definitely would do all this mind-bending things. But he was also a good human being and a good friend. You know, when I was bullied on the Paramount lot by some other writers that were older and snarkier, he came to my defense and he was a great guy. But, you know, the key to Andy was one exchange I had with him when he was looking at the National Enquirer, and he was just saying, God, they wrote something so terrible about me. And I said, well, that's what they do to celebrities. He goes, but it's really mean. Look at it. Look how mean this is. And I go, well, yeah, but that's what they do. It's a tabloid. And then I asked Andy, you know, I wonder where they got something like this. And he said, they got it from me.
Yeah, there was a very mad genius to him. I wish I grew up during that period.
Star Wars. He didn't see anything that was popular but he'd be interested in hearing about it. I tried to describe it to him, and I said, it has mythology in it. And he goes, oh, mythology, all right. And then it was his favorite movie was A Texas Chainsaw Massacre, because he said that was art, which it is.
Sure.
Andy didn't try to be weird. He was just true to himself. But I got to stress, there was a good, sensitive, caring human being there, and he was a very good friend. He was just never boring. He was just so interesting. He was in a different wavelength all the time. But it was fascinating to watch, and he was great to know. And he was a kind and gentle soul, very much more accessible than you would think or than he's been portrayed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good to hear.
I'll tell you one story about it real quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
He did this Carnegie Hall show that was very, very famous, you know, with the Rockettes, and pulled out all the stops.
Sure.
It was a big hit and critically acclaimed. It was very expensive to put on. He would put these shows on and not make money on them because he would put so much into them. It wasn't a make-a-wish thing. It came directly to him. It was anonymous. But a girl in a hospital who was very ill. I don't know if she was terminal, but it was very serious. A girl in the hospital wrote to him, was very upset that she could not come to Carnegie Hall and see the show because she was a big fan. He ostensibly, within as much as he could, staged the show for that girl there.
Oh, my God. That's great. Wow.
Out of his own pocket. And no publicity, no self-aggrandizing, no media, you know, hunt for sainthood. He staged as much as he could of that show for that girl.
How much do you believe, speaking of the media and everything, and by the way, Ron Perlman, last month, I know you and I talked about this, Alan, where he showed up as Hellboy for that
yep.
sick child. That was amazing. And that wasn't Ron looking for publicity. That was his mother, or the kid's mother, whatever, took a picture of him. How much, though, has the media changed the game now? I mean, for instance, Jodie Foster wrote that interesting memo today about Kristen Stewart and talked about how if she was getting started in acting right now, she'd quit. How much is the media really changing everybody?
It changes everybody, I think, in the immediacy and the access. For example, when you are interested in the fact that I took a bus down because I was a kid and snuck onto that set of Young Frankenstein, you wouldn't be encouraged or really have a need to do that then. You could probably tweet the set. You could probably look at a live feed or have a Facebook page, and that would give you the connection to it. This connection that I had to go there. There was no other lifeline. There was no other way to reach that. So celebrities are, remember when you used to have to write to a celebrity and then wait for a few months to get an autographed photo back and then you hope it's really their autograph?
Yeah.
But right now people casually tweet their favorite celebrity and hear back. It made me laugh when I was looking at Russell Crowe's Twitter page and he's retweeting happy birthdays to people. This is Maximus, you know, and he's their happy birthday to you. He's acting like a kid show host during some of it. It was very charming and it made me happy to see him doing that. But, and also, the perception that people have for themselves is they feel more like celebrities now, too, because there's an illusion, and maybe it's not incorrect because of Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. I mean, there are you know, there's somebody that's a short-order cook somewhere that has more Twitter followings than the star of this, you know, CW.
Yeah.
So everybody is also kind of a star right now. And it's almost, you know, 15 minutes of fame or 15 clicks of like. But, you know, anybody can make a film and put it on YouTube starring themselves. Mm-hmm. And if there are enough people giving them props for it, they feel they've made it. So it's almost like a weird level playing field of what it takes to be famous now. Everyone is famous in their own mind.
I was doing a little research, by the way. If you want to see that billboard of the bullet in the face, it's on 7th Avenue in New York. Which I'd love to go to New York.
That's great.
It's on 7th Avenue. Drive on this. Walk on.
There's a few. That's very nice to know. No, they've done a good job. They for a show this unconventional and weird and potentially upset so many people. I mean, of course they've had qualms and there's some insecurities and tails between legs about it. But you know that happens when you deal with something that isn't safe. So. But they did figure out a way to align it with Fight Club, which I certainly approve of. And I'm thrilled to be airing in the week of Stallone movies. To me, that's a career highlight, to be airing alongside Rambo and all those things.
I agree. That's great. I wanted to talk about someone who I've met and is friends with a bunch of friends of mine, including you. Brent Spiner is a he's a big backer of this show. And, for instance, one of his tweets was he wants people to catch bullet in the face, which is him being funny as well. But Brent's been a big support.
Brent Spiner is a genius.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful, wonderful, well-rounded talent. But he's up there. I think that, you know, people know him best, obviously, as Mr. Data. But to be able to sustain Mr. Data, he had to bring so many different diverse talents to it, dance, musical theater, comedy, because Data is really funny, and then also Data is an action character. So it's an iconic character for some reason. And Brent Spiner is every much the equal of Gene Wilder and Danny Kaye, that kind of entertainer. He does Broadway and is brilliant. I saw him do 1776. He did Man of La Mancha in a limited run, but I read the reviews and didn't get to see it. So This is a man who can hold the Broadway stage and just basically do everything. And he has his own original web series that he's made
Fresh
now called Fresh Hell, yeah. which you can see on YouTube. And it's really funny, and it's every bit as good as many of the cable shows you see. So I'm a big fan of his. And he shares the traits that the other greats I've known in my life, like Marty Feldman and Andy and Mel Brooks, has, that he's a nice, accessible person and very, very humble. So I know you've been trying to get him on the show, and I hope that eventually happens, because he's just great. And I was stunned when he did that with Twitter, because he has more followings than anybody. He has more followers than the network's own page or any
yeah.
other shows. It was over 2 million people, and he put that out there. And it was very funny to see the responses. They're very obedient, you know, the trekkers, which is great. They'll do whatever they're told. So I guess they're going to watch, or they're going to get IFC now if they don't have it.
There's a true story.
I like the idea of people watching Bullet in the Face dressed as the Borg.
Yeah, that's funny. I had drinks with Brett Cullen and Brent Spiner one night, and Brent brought his lovely wife, and we were talking, and I said, you know, I didn't know about Fresh Hell, and I said I was going to check it out, and I did, and he gave me a card that said, you just promised Brent Spiner you're going to watch Fresh Hell, and I said, okay, yes, I am. And
you have that card, don't you?
Yes, I have that card, and he said, I'd love to come do your show. So I was trying to get him and trying to get him and trying to get him, and then one time he told me, if I came to Canada, I could do the show with him from some convention. Then I find out that weekend he was trying to send me to Canada. He was in Phoenix, Arizona. So,
well,
listen,
he
Brent Spiner.
Kaufman about him, too. So he's a man of mystery.
Listen, Spiner, you're lucky
I'm sure
I didn't blow
him. You'll be able to pin him down at some point. He's pretty busy. He was in Canada doing, I guess, the Warehouse 13
yeah.
show, and so he travels around. So, but he has that side of him as well. I'm sure eventually you'll be able to get a show with him at some point in some continent that you recognize.
There will be.
Like I said, I was very, very touched. He's been very supportive of this. He's a heavy hitter in the comedy community. He's a genre star, certainly from science fiction, but in the comedy field, I mean, he's just really, really great.
Yeah, he is great, and he's just fucking with me. So whatever. I did want to bring up as well, this is very interesting to me, some of these reviews, man. I mean, like, first of all, Eddie Izzard. Can we talk about Eddie Izzard for a second? How amazing is he as an actor? He's fantastic, and he's
yeah.
great in this show.
He's great. He's I'm so thrilled he did this. I knew he was going to do it when I met with him because of the questions he was asking, and also because I told the truth. He was interested why I made the character agoraphobic, and I said, so I can shoot him in one location in 5 days and get a big star like you. So he thought that was funny. But he's interested in dramatic roles. He said he doesn't do comedy roles, but he was drawn to this because there was a dramatic subtext to it, and also because it was a villain. And he had said he would enjoy being a Bond villain, which I think this shows during some of the serious
oh, yeah.
parts that he could easily do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's up there. He's an intellectual giant. He's someone who learns to speak different languages so he can do his act in those languages, do his stand-up in other countries, Germany, France, Italy. And the ultimate thing I can say about him, I had great discussions with him and great collaboration as far as comic logic and making things better and give and take and rewriting and everything like that. But the highest praise I'm going to give to him is the character in the final episode plays Moonlight Sonata, and he asked me why I chose that piece. I explained my thinking of the mood, what it represents historically. He sat and learned how to play it in a matter of a few days. He was doing it in between takes. And learning to play it well, he did not have to learn how to play it because obviously we have an audio track and just dub it in later. He literally was playing it and playing it well. So you give Eddie Izzard any challenge, and if he hasn't done it before, he will acquit himself and achieve it and add another notch to his creative belt.
Yeah, that's great. Wow. He's so talented in this. We were talking before he came on, and I told Chuck, Chuck hadn't seen it yet, because it premieres tomorrow night. You can catch it August 16th, August 17th, 3 episodes each night, Bullet in the Face on IFC, anywhere but the dish, I hear. Chuck, I asked him if he saw the preview with the Eddie Izzard talking to Gunther, who's played by Max Williams, who's fabulous in the show. And you really enjoyed it, right, Chuck?
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was funny.
I do. I'm looking forward to watching it.
It's thick. It's twisted.
I think we're guaranteed cult status, you know?
Yep. I was going to say, too, there's definitely a vibe to this show because IFC, of course, has also put out Bunk and has put out Scott Aukerman's show. And Scott Aukerman's a guy I really, really like. He's a classy, classy guy. But I got to tell you, I've never seen so much press for any show on IFC as much as you're getting for this. I mean, you're getting a lot of press. Everyone's covering this thing.
Well, I think that's partly the nature of it because TV is so kind of cookie cutter, and whether they want to castigate or praise something, this is a show everybody wants to get a look at. They've certainly heard about it and the nature of it, and we've been very open and certainly talking about it, and New York Post was a very, very fruitful conversation with Mike Starr, and I was shocked because Mike Starr wanted to talk to me because he'd read Marty Feldman's biography, and I was in it, and so he was fascinated by that. And there might be another major one breaking tomorrow that's national. So for a basic cable channel, you know, we've traveled pretty well. But I think part of it is also, besides everything else, and people craving something different, and certainly the provocative nature of the violence, and this is a show that is hard to categorize. I mean, they're also drawn to the cast. I mean, they're interesting people. Eddie Izzard, Eric Roberts, Larry Wilmore does a fabulous cameo, is a favorite to me. And Max Williams and Kate Kelton, very attractive, interesting people. Neil Napier and Jessica Steen. And I think that also people just want to see something that shakes it up in the comedy field. And I think that people take more chances in a cable comedy of animation than they do live action. So I'll take it. But I got to tell you, I mean, this was not designed as I'd never sat down and really consciously kind of designed what the reaction to this would be, nor did I understand. I knew what more the reaction to Sledgehammer would be, because even though that was an out there comedy back then, it wasn't as extreme as this. So I was just trying to be provocative. I'm older now, and I just don't care about the same thing. I'm not trying to be liked, and TV shows try to appeal to everybody. And in this kind of new age, it's more niche, and you don't have to appeal. It doesn't have to mean everything to everybody. So my target demo for this is 18 to 49 sociopaths, and that's what I hope to reach. You know what? It's not male or female.
Well,
a wide reach.
You reached.
The one thing I will say, if I were a kid, and I'll admit this, you're not supposed to watch this, but if I had access to watching this would probably be the greatest thing to watch if I were a kid.
Oh, no,
you know?
That's for sure. If you were like 10 or 12, yeah. But you got Chuck because it's got comedy and it's dark and it's violent. You got Lenny because of the great strip club scene in the first episode. So you got everyone in right now. You've sucked them all in.
Well, I like the term sucking, so sucking them in is good. So.
And let me tell you, it's no pun intended, Kate Kelton, phenomenal in this show. Alan, you do not have to comment on this if you don't want, but she may be the sexiest newcomer to television.
She's getting a great response. I mean, that the other, I've been getting offers. There's been a lot of heat now because of this project and its notoriety. So people are offering me a lot of things and asking me to come in for meetings. So top heads of studios and top producers are all reacting really strongly to her and asking the proverbial question, who's that girl? So that's kind of thrilling to see because she deserves it. She's a really, really talented, nice person. She already booked another series reoccurring. She has some arc on Sci-Fi's Haven. So she's just got something that people want more of, and she's pretty fearless. Believe it or not, since you've seen the show, this is her first time dealing with kind of action and guns. I don't think she'd even held a gun before. This is the first time she's done any of that stuff, but she took like a fish to warfare, you know?
Yeah, she was. I am never a loss for words. I can't even talk about her. I'm losing my. Wait, what, Lenny?
Is she single?
Is she single? I don't know if Alan knows.
Okay.
Well, she's not plural, so I don't know. She probably is single for all viewers and anyone interested. I'll put it like that, or whatever. I don't know. I haven't seen her with anyone. So, but I can't speak about her personal life. I only know her as an actress, and I'm sure you'll probably be meeting her, interviewing her at some point.
Well,
she has a bright future for her.
Working on it. I want to make sure I'm back in town for that, though. there's no use doing it on the phone. It's just no use. I wanted to talk to you, though, about Max Williams as well. And Max Williams is going to be on the Kevin Pollak chat show this week, I believe. Am I wrong about that? Or no? Is he going to be on the KPCS show? I don't know. Someone told me he was going to be doing another podcast this week. But Max Williams plays Gunter in this, and he's fantastic. And what made you cast him for this role?
It's very unusual that, first of all, you know, I was scripting the series, and it was always hinging on, you know, we had gotten other people. I wrote a part for Eric Roberts and got Eric Roberts. And
yeah.
You know, Eddie Izzard, I never imagined getting, and getting him was a big thing. So obviously the $64,000 question, the fulcrum of the show, depended on who would play this main character, or even further, whether anybody could, because it's such a specific, singular, you know, out there character, and it's a challenge. I brought in a casting director I very much trust named Ivy Eisenberg, who is responsible for most of the key casting of this. And the first person that she said was worth seeing, you know, was, and a lot of people couldn't handle the part, we wouldn't even come in for it, were afraid of it. But the first person she showed me on tape was Max Williams. And it was fabulous. And he was fearless, and he understood the material and hit everything right. He got the part. There were other people that came in audition later, but it was just kind of pro forma, as a perfunctory thing. This is the first time that the first actor that I had seen read the material won the role.
That's great. I was going to ask you, because I get this feeling with the show, and I don't know, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but I get a feeling you did write this show. I think as a society, we are generally very bored. And there's so much going on in this show so quick. Like, it's super easy to follow, but kind of like Sledgehammer, where it was so different that it kind of got people out of their boredom funk. Like, we're just bored of everything right now.
This is true. Well, it's easy to be bored when, first of all, everything's a sequel and a remake. I keep telling people Hollywood's way of battling piracy is to remake every movie and TV show ever made. So when you go to download, you see Total Recall and Hawaii 5-0 and all these things. I've seen these already. And that's their way of battling piracy. I mean, I don't want to sound pretentious, but I probably do. But I don't like to be bored. Marty Feldman had always said the most criminal sin is to bore somebody. And, you know, Get Smart never bored me. I like things that are sort of out there and immersive, where you can get really involved in them. All the great cult shows, people get so heavily into them. They dress as the characters. And that tends to be, you know, sci-fi. And this is sort of a genre show. So, you know, I appreciate you saying that, because my kind of personal barometer for all of this is, I want a lot of things to be going on, and I want to hold the attention, and I don't want anything to amble. I don't want to bore people. I like things to be exciting, and even if it's over the top, and hold your attention. So that's really where I was approaching this. I mean, if it's not boring to me, it's a success if it holds your interest, because most TV is background noise. I mean, there's too many procedurals.
Yeah.
And they're all alike. I can't tell, you know, CSI, NCSI, CBS should be called CSI. I mean, I don't, everything has, like, yellow police tape. I was even saying I'm waiting for, like, the Today Show or The Price is Right just to have yellow police tape there, because everything is, like, one long procedural. And the sad thing is they used to take risks. And because every network's ratings are so close to each other, nobody rolls the dice anymore. And they play it safe, and they put on variations of the same show. So that's why I commend IFC for making this. I can't think of any other network that would make it. You know, maybe Showtime, I don't know. But even they don't go this bizarre with their comedies.
No.
So just don't want to bore people. So I'm glad you find it engaging.
No, I like I told Dan Pasternak. I told Dan, I said no matter how you must have felt like with the violence and with, oh, my God, how's this going to turn out? Because as a network exec, you're always worried about, okay, we paid them to go do this. Now they're going to bring me back a final product. I wonder how it turns out. You don't got to worry, Dan. This thing is the most original thing I've seen in years. But I do want to bring up on the flip side of that, and by the way, the most original thing you could see in years, August 16th, August 17th, 3 episodes a night on IFC, bullet in the face. But there was a review from Las Vegas that I want to ask you about. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes.
Thanks to its bizarre approach and nearly nonsensical storytelling, Bullet in the Face has a sort of train wreck fascination to it, and it's kind of a unique fiasco that will probably garner a cult following. But given the way IFC is burying it, it's likely to end up with the same fate as Spencer's last show, all but forgotten by everyone except a handful of devotees. How do you respond to that? It's brutal.
And
inaccurate, too.
Because if you look at the first part of the view, he said that the same show that's forgotten by devotees has a sizable following.
Right, right. Yeah, he was wrong in many areas. Like, for instance, nonsensical storytelling.
He's an internet reviewer, so he's not really a professional. He's kind of a kid who was raised on silver spoons. And I think it's very, very good that they hired the handicapped. And that's really good. He's mentally impaired. But it's a moronic review. He's comparing it to things he didn't know what to make of it, and he even used poor grammar. There's grammatical errors, but when he negated himself in the same thing. He says Sledgehammer has a sizable following, and then he says it's forgotten.
But no one knows about
actually.
It.
So it's on DVD and sold a lot. I get offers all the time to do a movie version, which I'm not interested in doing. But you know, you take it with a grain of salt because you're doing something different. Look, everybody's a critic, and. Ultimately, you only answer to the audience. I mean, I've gotten praise, too, and I react to the praises the same way as I react to the condemnation. I like to have both, but, having a mixed reaction to this was something I anticipated. I love the review from Columbus when he said this was the strangest thing he'd ever watched in his lifetime as a critic.
Obviously, he hasn't seen Salo or done other films.
Well, yeah, but I think maybe he's talking about sitcoms.
Oh, okay. Okay, maybe. Well, obviously he doesn't.
You have to have, Blazing Saddles got horrible reviews when it came out, scathing, but then they change over time. So, Sledgehammer, I got lucky. I got a lot of raves, but even then there were a couple that certainly took shots. But that just goes with the territory. A lot more people are critics now because, they were able to write reviews and post them on .com.
Yeah,
and so it's kind of all over the page. I had Huffington Post negate that it was the most inventive show or most original in years. But it's not for everybody. It was never designed as that. Network shows are designed to be for everybody. So I expect things like that. I'm frankly surprised when I see when people are embracing it unabashedly. And it's being aired in a conventional way. It's very difficult to review a comedy show airing in bulk like this. Usually just people review the pilot. Or maybe one other episode and wonder where it's going, but it's being aired in a certainly different way. But a lot of people have said that shows will be forgotten or won't work, and then they do. So who knows, I think there's a famous review of Star Trek from TV Guide that said it would only appeal to small fry and wouldn't last long. So who knows? But anytime you're doing a show that's outside of the norm, you're going to get kind of extreme reactions like that. But that was particularly a poor written review. He contradicted himself within it at the same time, and he's. I think he committed suicide already. I think this is his last review.
Honestly, the Columbus guy never saw Two Guys, a Girl, in a Pizza Place because that's the oddest comedy I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was
ever.
Surreal. That was really mind-bending, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's much odder comedy out there.
To me, Small Wonder remains the strangest, but that's just me.
Oh, I love Small Wonder. That was a disaster. That was a train wreck you couldn't stop watching was Small Wonder. That and my other favorite was Belvedere.
But the thing about that review I like is he said that how can you say something like this? He's still thinking it's going to have a cult following. He's saying this is going to appeal to somebody.
Yeah.
Who knows?
That's very interesting. My producer Caesar, I know he had some questions about the show. Caesar, did you want to ask Alan your questions or make your comments? Do you want to take a microphone? Do you know how this show works, Caesar? Do you know how the equipment works? The buttons?
He's our
Okay. All right. Produce me a microphone, producer. Thank you. Okay. Go ahead, Caesar.
Hey, Alan, how you doing?
Is that Caesar's voice
this
now?
This is me, yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, barely, but speak loudly. Hopefully you'll be repeated if need be.
How about now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now you're good.
Yeah?
Yeah, I sort of hear you. Go ahead.
All right, well, bear with me. But first of all, I saw the whole thing. And it's interesting you guys are doing 3 and 3 because that's actually how I saw it. And I got to say, initially when I saw the first episode, I was like, wow, that's super original. I haven't seen anything like that before. But I'm still kind of curious as to where it's going. Then I sat through the rest of them, and I was like, this is genius. I mean, I was totally entertained.
After the first one, you did seem a little like, Matt, this is a little violent.
Yeah, Matt,
it's a little dark.
Yeah, I said, you know, I'm like, It is.
Yeah,
I like
it held you. So obviously that's praising the way IFC is airing this. So you were compelled as far as how it was going, as far as the story, right?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminded me in the beginning, like Sin City in a way, where I was like, okay, I can take this kind of violence, but I was like, wow, I didn't think I'd see something like this on TV, and I'm actually happy you did it because I really haven't seen like it. It's definitely the most original thing I've seen, and it was funny and original, and the style, everything you did, the casting.
Well, I'm pleased this is your response to it. I mean, a lot of people have come to me about the way it ends, which we're not giving away.
Which I've seen.
But, you know, it was all kind of leading towards that. And then, you know, if there were more of them, that would be interesting to deal with. You could go, but it could also perfectly end that way and leave it to your imagination. So I like bringing something ambiguous to comedy, even whether you should laugh or not in some instances. But really was this rare opportunity in life where you get handed 6 episodes. It's almost like IFC is more like the British model, more like the BBC, where you get to have your vision and you write them all. And you get to have your personal stamp about it, and you don't have to homogenize anything. And I can stand behind this and say, yes, I wrote every episode, and this is what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that's so rare. I mean, I'm getting other offers now where that's not going to happen. It'll be more of the corporate bureaucracy of doing a TV show. But in this instance, it was more of an indie mentality. I don't want to say IFC doesn't stand for the Independent Film Channel anymore. It just stands for IFC. but they still have that sensibility.
No, it's time for you to make some money now, Alan. It's time for you to do the bureaucratic thing.
I did this for less, but, you know, it's okay. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Montreal. It was very unique. A lot of snow. I've learned some French that I could say. I was able to, you know, hear the word. I didn't know what they were saying a lot of time when they were speaking French, but I was able to pick up on it. You know, I could tell. Especially when they're pointing my direction, I could hear the word Jew. So I could hear that. Half Jewish, but it was unique. It was very funny because the crew, a lot of them spoke French. They didn't know some of them didn't know this was a comedy. They didn't know what we were making. You know, thought it was a drama. You know, and they heard some of the dialogue, and one of them came up in kind of broken English saying, "This isn't for Fox, is it?"
that's kind of funny you say that because when I first saw it, I actually didn't know either what it was. Well, no one told me what it was supposed to be. So I go, Matt, this is actually pretty freaking hilarious to me. I'm like, is that bad? You know? And there, like you said earlier, there's
some people that watch it and just wonder, you know, what's going on here, which is kind of the surreal thing. You know, it's parts of it that are serious as well, too.
Absolutely.
So,
and you could see that you totally did that.
It'll be interesting to see what the response, you know, to it is. I can't predict. The people that really like it will like it, and then the people that don't. So it's already upset some people. I'm reading a reviewer. The third episode upset her, which is pretty provocative since it's kind of ripped from the headlines because you can certainly predict all the tragedies from the news that they're a regular part of our life. I've said this before. When random acts of violence happen with more and more frequency, they're no longer random. So we're just accepting that all these shootings keep happening, and the only variable is the locations now. Location, 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 you know, where it was a school, post office, a movie theater, and now there are other locations where you're not safe. And so a third episode sort of deals with some of that and the nature of evil and whether it is truly nature and nurture. And then, you know, like I said, I just read a review where somebody's just really upset about it and really upset that it was this violent and it wasn't like Sledgehammer.
I don't think that's the case because, yeah, I guess initially if you see it and you only take it for that value of it, maybe, but I really don't think it is. If you look at it, it's so funny. It just doesn't seem like, I don't know, believable violence where it's like, oh, my God, this is so terrible. Because there's so much, I think there's a lot of humor to it, and you balance it in a lot of different ways where you're kind of like, it's more comical than anything, you know? That's at least the way I look at it.
Well, that's your response, and that's great. You know, some people react to violence, whether it's comic or not, just that they react to violence, and they react to it negatively, no matter what the intention is. So that's why it's kind of going to be all over the map as far as that. So I'm pleased that's your reaction. And in my own way, I mean, I accept the other person that doesn't dig it for that reason, but you know, you don't bring me in to do safe or to do something ordinary, certainly not in this venue. You do want to make noise and get some attention and do something different. You don't want it to be like anything else you can find anywhere else, because I've done too much of that. I was more offended by the episode of Facts of Life that I wrote than anything in this, because it was a very special episode. It was very preachy, and that was hideous for me.
I was going to say, Alan, I'm thankful because sometimes when you become friends with people, especially in this business, you can be embarrassed by saying you're friends with them because they do shitty work sometimes. This is not shitty work, so thank you for not embarrassing me.
Yeah, and Matt promoed the hell out of it.
I'm pleased. Yeah, shitty work is a good thing to avoid. That's a good career goal. I think that's a mantra. I think you should.
I told everybody you got to see this. Alan Spencer's the best.
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. I probably looked like a fucking hack. And then people watched it, and they're like, oh, he ain't fucking lying. He does know someone talented.
Yeah, Matt really was all over it, genuinely, which is great. And I was like, all right, if Matt liked it this much, I mean, I really got to sit through this thing. And I'm glad I did. And I'm glad you did the way you did it. You know, it sucks how people get offended about stuff. But I think people overall are going to really like it, especially the fact that, like, you know, once you, at least for me, you get past the first one, you're like, okay, you get curious. Once you see, like, two, three, and on, it gets better and better. And it's just it overall is great.
Caesar, one quick thing. I'm on the phone with Alan, and I keep getting emails from Ron Zimmerman, who Alan knows. And here's the thing, Ron. So Ron is saying I gave Alan his to be continued spot. God, I hate you. Well, his show is coming on, and I love him. Let him plug his thing, you cunt.
You never did call him back.
That's real nice, Ron.
I told
nice
you to also. I told you to call him at Cigars.
Well, Ron loves Alan. He had only good things to say about Alan and his show. Me, I'm now on Ron's bad list.
Well, you can call him now.
I did want to say that when you talk about the people, you know, having people or friends and things that come on the show and their work, I mean, you have pretty stellar guest stars and everything. And you had William Friedkin on recently, right?
Yeah, Billy's great, yeah.
I mean, that's great. I mean, his movie is great as far as taking risks and McConaughey and everything like that. So I do like seeing people pushing the envelope still and doing work that gets attention and isn't worried about being, I don't know. You know, there's a little bit too much conservatism going on, and that shouldn't be in the arts in my book, you know?
Alan, how do you know Ron? Where does this friendship grow from? Please help me.
Let me think back. It's probably because we shared clean needles. No. I'm trying to remember when we first met. I think we had the same agent when I was just doing Sledge and getting some notoriety from that. And I think I met him then, and he was kind of a kindred spirit. He's a unique and offbeat character and very, very honorable person as well, too. He was someone who also knew Andy Kaufman and encountered him. So he's he's a unique voice and writer, but he's a very, very centered, fun person of his own kind of unique ethical code that he lives by. That's a pretty honorable one, and he's a good person in the crises. I mean, he's kind of a Charles Bukowski who can do stand-up, I guess I'd describe him as. And very, very generous and not competitive and somebody you root for, but he's just very, very unique and very magnetic personality. I've seen it. People are drawn to him.
Well, I sent out an email today letting everybody know what was going on with me. I didn't want them thinking I wasn't coming back to L.A. And Ron is upset with me because I did not call him one of my heroes.
I saw
that.
I think I liked it, too.
And I'm trying to explain to Ron. He's not giving up on this thing. He's really pissed. So I do want to say on the radio, Ron is, of course, my hero. He has the best recipe for curing back ailments. It involves doses upon doses of pot.
And he was, I honestly think he was one of our best shows.
Yes, that works.
And Ron's always a great show.
He's a great show.
Yeah, he's a nutcase.
Especially the first one was great.
So I told him to call in and say at least hi to Alan. He goes, can't call. I'm meeting Wilford Brimley for dinner and got to go soon. Can you believe the money he's made pretending to have the diabetes? That was my idea, you know. What a cash cow. I can't fucking win. I can't fucking win with Ron.
I'm a good judge on America's Got Talent. You know,
we said that.
I'd like to see Ron do something like that because it would steer people in the right direction. You know?
I'd pay good money to watch Ron Zimmerman judge any show.
he's unique. He endlessly fascinates. You know, he's a good guy. He's a perfect guest for you because I well, what I like hearing you as you talk about him, you start to remind me of Inspector Clouseau's boss. I almost see your eye twitching or something. So,
you know, it's just useless talking about Ron anymore. He's not going to believe me anyways. Just going to keep busting my chops. So, Alan, I know you're just kind of like one of those guys where you don't really plan out your next like five projects ahead. You just kind of write to write, right? You just kind of do what you do.
Yeah, I'm like the Joker from The Dark Knight. I just do things.
Did you like the new movie? Did you like Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah, I did.
I did.
I liked them all. I love what Nolan has done with those.
Ron hates it.
They're splendid. I mean, it was so horrifying to me that when Heath Ledger died, and then to see that and just see the loss that we don't get that fabulous performance. But I also see how it could take a toll on the psyche. It was so intense. But, I mean, I've never seen anything quite like that. And I loved Anne Hathaway in the new movie. I thought Bale did great. I mean, Christopher Nolan's just a great, great artist. I met him on the lot over there at Warner Brothers, too, and he was
really?
A humble, accessible guy to talk to. Just briefly I met him. I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway, she's sexy. She's great in that.
She's great. That's an understatement to say she's sexy.
Right.
So do you like Anne Hathaway more than Kate Kelton?
Kelton was... She's really good.
I don't know. She's good. Kate's good. But Anne... I've had a crush on Anne since Princess Diaries. What an underrated film.
All right. Well, Kate will overtake her at some point.
I don't doubt that, by the way.
What an underrated film that Princess Diaries was. Just one of Gary Marshall's finest. And have you ever met Gary Marshall, Alan? You guys, that seems like it could have happened.
Yeah, I know Gary Marshall. He knows me. I was part of an apprentice writing program at Paramount when I was a kid, and that he spearheaded. So he welcomed me. I remember you sitting in his office and he gave you a speech going, you're going to be paid less than you're worth right now, and then in a few years you're going to be paid more than you're worth. You know, so I see him, run into him all the time, and he's always friendly, and he likes Sledgehammer. And I've worked with Penny before as a director. That gives you a clue into people I've done some work for.
Right.
Gary Marshall's a great guy. He's a great guy. He's helped so many people in the business. And he was the reason I was able to be a teenage writer because of a program that he set up at Paramount. And he had a basketball court there, and he played basketball with everybody. And he kept that lot afloat for many, many years, his shows.
See, I'm glad I brought up Gary and talked about him. I didn't even know that. I didn't know Gary was a part of that program for you.
He started it.
Oh, wow.
He incepted it. He was the reason they had that.
He
created this program so that you could be kind of intern as a writer, be an apprentice writer, and it worked out with the guild and everything like that. And then eventually you joined the guild so you could learn on the job.
That's cool.
Without it, many, many people wouldn't have careers. But he's always helped people, gone out of his way, and discovered new talent. And he's the reason I was able to write TV shows at a very, very young age.
I've always liked Gary Marshall. I actually did like Princess Diaries, and I'm a big fan of Pretty Woman, and I like Runaway Bride, and what else did I like Gary Marshall's? Do you like
anything? You know what I liked that he did? I liked that he did a pilot, 2-hour MOW that did not sell. I believe they did it with Jerry Belson. That was the funniest of movie of the week ever made, and it has a cult following still, and it's on DVD. It's called Evil Roy Slade. Stars John Astin as the meanest guy in the West. I think it was done in 1970, and has an all-star cast. If you look it up, called Evil Roy Slade, it's hilarious. It's as hilarious as any theatrical.
I like John Astin, so I and we've had Sean Astin on the show, of course. So there
you must. See this film. It's Gary Marshall and Jerry, because Gary's really funny, and so is Jerry Belson. They did it together. You will laugh out loud. It's a sick and weird show. It's very strange. It's Dick Shawn in it as a singing sheriff that's kind of like Elvis, and it's totally bizarre. It's totally bizarre. But it's about a sociopathic cowboy played by John Astin in it. So when you see it, you will love it. So it's called Evil Roy Slade.
I'm gonna find that. I'm gonna check it out. One more time. The Bullet in the Face, of course, is August 16th, August 17th. 3 episodes a night on IFC, and I think they're gonna be pancaked in between some great movies too. So, you make it an IFC week. You sit there Thursday and Friday watching IFC. That's what I'm gonna do. Me and my sugar-free products. Caesar, you got more?
Yeah, just one more thing.
You got more.
You guys are talking about laughing.
He's got more.
One more thing. You guys talk about laughing out loud and everything, and I just want to say there aren't many things that I see on TV anymore, even in a long time, that make me actually laugh my ass out,
okay,
out loud.
Okay, laugh out loud, though. Is there another way to laugh?
Yeah, sure.
I
you
hate
laugh
that
in your head,
thing.
You know?
I
mean, you do. But
thing.
I was like, you know, watching this thing. I was
it makes
just,
no sense.
Well, look, there's at least 5-6 times I'm actually laughing out loud, and the rest of the time I'm just laughing.
There's 5 or 6 times where you're laughing.
No, I'm always laughing, but I'm actually just...
No, you're enjoying.
Your
you're always enjoy. Oh, you laugh
you
in your head.
Your head.
Okay.
People do it all the time.
Okay, all right. Fine.
You never see someone sit through something and go, how do you not think this is funny? They go, I do think it's funny. You're like, well, why the fuck aren't you laughing?
Whatever.
Anyway,
whatever.
Look,
a lot of people don't laugh anymore. They just type LOL.
Well, look, I laughed in my mind and out loud, but what I want to say is it was really, really funny, and you did a great job. Everything from the casting to the style of it and everything. So I'm glad you did it the way you did.
Okay,
thank
there we
you.
Go.
Thank
Caesar
you so
Marconi.
Much.
Caesar Marconi, ladies and gentlemen. He's fantastic. All right, Alan, here's all I need from you. When I'm back in town, I want to get together and do another show. And I want to talk about, because you have just a rich history, and I just want to talk more about everything. But I really wanted to talk about Bullet in the Face today.
Well, that'll be great. We'll do it at Coney Dog at Mike Binder's wonderful place.
There it is. It all gets around 8873 West Sunset Boulevard. That is Coney Dog for you, where I can still have turkey dogs with vegan chili. And the turkey dog and vegan chili.
That's what I eat. They have the best vegan chili there.
It does. And I'm not even a vegan. The vegan chili's outstanding.
Yeah, it's great, and a great turkey burger, and it's a nice place to go and hang, and they have celebrities there and everything. It's a wonderful place. I will be spending many time. After Bullet in the Face airs, I'll be spending time there hiding out.
Yes, you'll be doing a good job hiding out on Sunset Strip. Of course. That's exactly where to hide out. You know what's funny about L.A., though? Do people really even give a shit about celebrities out there? I always just kind of feel like no one cares.
I think they do. They do and they don't. They do if they have a camcorder and they can sell something to TMZ. So I think they're more about trying to catch them doing something inappropriate or goading them. So it's almost like, I think, like animals in the zoo where you're trying to get them to attack. So I think it's more predator now, you know?
I'm sorry. I'm staring at one of my closest friends, Mikey Turzo, who everyone knows on this show, diving into my refrigerator, and he thinks that's sweet and sour sauce when it is not. It's lemon and shrimp sauce or something. Things tend to get fat over here on this show, for lack of a better term. There's a lot of fatness going on, and that's why it's time to diet and get rid of the diabetes.
There you go. Well, you know, turkey franks are a good way to do it, and many other things that you... that you can eat and keep it under control and have a good time. So,
well, I'll hit you up and we'll have a meal when I'm back in town. I look forward to seeing you. I miss talking to you in person.
All right, we'll definitely do that.
You're a good man, Alan. Everybody, Bullet in the Face tomorrow, of course, is August 16th, August 17th, three episodes a night on IFC. We want to thank Dan Pasternak as well, the head of IFC, for having faith in the show and giving Alan the reins. And it's just, I'm telling you, I know you think it's a talk show. He has guests on. They plug their shit. I'm not just blowing Alan to blow Alan. This show is really original. It's outstanding. I promise you. Lenny's giving me that look like, no, here you go with your Hollywood blowjob shit.
I'll vouch
Lenny,
for it on
I'm
record.
Telling you right now. I'm telling you right now, Lenny, you will like this show. I don't know if Alan, that's a good question. Is it going to be on demand?
I don't know. I think it's going to be available on iTunes and Amazon, I know for sure. And then there's some other formats where gamers can see it. So I don't know about that one in particular, but it will be available people have already ordered a season pass of it.
Oh, that's so great. So there's some other ways to watch it, iTunes and Amazon, see? And I know I'm going to get Binder to watch it hopefully this week, and I know he's looking forward to it as well. And Ron Zimmerman's really looking forward to it. Hopefully I'll have some celebrity reviews of the show on the next episode.
So, and we definitely want people to watch it live for the ratings.
Yes.
So that IFC does well by this, and their whole Bullet Week with the Expendables 2 is the sponsor. And so definitely the dates of 16th and 17th, if you have IFC, watch it or find somebody that does. We want you watching it live, and then you can watch it everywhere else afterwards. But try to watch it live and support the show.
We want great ratings for this because we want Alan telling everyone told you so. So, thank
Matt
you.
Matt doesn't look dumb.
I already don't look dumb because everyone that has seen this show has came back to me and said, Matt, I'm sorry. I thought you're a corporate chill. You're not. This guy's got. I told you. I tell people this on the show all the time.
I don't want to do a show anybody else could do. So I'd rather have a gap in my career and six episodes or two seasons of an offbeat show that people like and still remember than do something that ran a long time that people complain about and said, you know, wasn't very good or was just like everything else. So I stand behind these six, and I'm pleased that you embrace the fact that it's not like anything else you've seen.
And I do want to plug Split Sider. Bradford Evans does a great job over there, and I know he's been wanting to come sit in on a podcast, and we're going to arrange that when I'm back in town. He does a great job there. Split Sider is a great website. It's a great website. They have some really unique material and columns over there. My favorite thing at Split Sider, I don't know how often you go to the website, Alan, but my favorite thing there is they have this column where they show you all the projects that people didn't do.
Yes, yeah, the lost works of.
Oh, my God.
I hope to have one of those since I've got some YouTube pilots that didn't go, you know.
What a great article every week that is, though. I love reading that.
Yeah, and Bradford interviewed me. The interview is up now, and it was one of the best interviews I ever got. It was great. He was laughing and playing into everything. It was a lot of fun. He was wonderful.
Well, good for Bradford. Now I don't know if I like Bradford so much. I'm changing my mind because I'm not too sure Alan's going to go to other interviews and say, you know, Matthew Aaron, he is a special guy.
He doesn't have
Bradford Evans is getting way too much play on this show.
Well,
okay.
You know what I want to leave you with because it sounds like we're wrapping up.
Please.
I want to tell you, you know, Mel Brooks is like the funniest man ever.
Yes.
And just casually funny on the phone or just being around him. If you film him all the time, just the things he does and says, it's hilarious.
Yes.
His phone calls are funnier than produce movies or TV shows. But here's something that was never said out there that I just think is hilarious that he did. Driving one day, Mel sees a guy hitchhiking. And the guy hitchhiking was standing in a street corner with a torn T-shirt, chains. It looked like he had some blood on his hands. And he looked like he had killed his whole family. And the guy was hitchhiking. And Mel looked at him and just said, the height of optimism.
I love Mel Brooks. By the way, I've been trying to get Mel Brooks on this show since the beginning of the show. And I don't know if that's ever happening, just so our listeners know.
No, good. You should get Max Brooks on.
Well, I'll take that. I try to get Dick Cavett. I try to get Mel Brooks. The old guys, Dick Van Dyke, literally told us, my mouth is too filthy, basically. Thanks, Dick. That's real. Man, thanks, Dick. Yeah, so Dick's not a big fan of mine.
Just keep at it and you could do it, you know? Maybe if you go to Mel, you could do it. If you go to his office or something like that. Max, you may be able to.
Yeah, I may have to.
Never give up.
I'm going to keep him and Albert Brooks. That's the other one I want. Albert Brooks real bad. And Gary Shandling I really want. And, yeah, I'll have to stalk him. That's just what's going to have to happen.
Yeah, Gary follows me on Twitter, which I consider to be a huge compliment.
It is a huge compliment if Gary follows you on Twitter, because Gary doesn't even know I exist. So that's
Brent's
good.
Brent's finer, too, so it's a good two-way street. Well, you know, I'm very happy with that. But Gary's a great guy. Gary is somebody I've known for years, too, besides being the comedian, great writer in mind, astounding human being with a wide range of interests, a very interesting person. So I wish you luck in trying to get him on the microphone.
Well, I wish me luck, too. But I will say this. Everyone. Once in a while, I pull out an Alan Spencer or a Billy Friedkin, and I'm a happy guy for a few months, and then I and then I try to get someone else. So that's all I can do right now.
Well, good luck. Maybe you can get Stallone, and we'll both be happy.
Oh,
I'll be in awe,
if you know an address where I could camp out, let me know. I will camp out in front of Sly's house. Maybe not his house. That's a little weird. But his studio, I know he's got to have a production office somewhere. That guy has a million movies going on right now. Sly Stallone, thank God he's a big, huge star again. Thank God.
Yes, we needed him, and we needed all those action stars and everything coming back. So I'm glad he's around. I enjoy seeing him.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Alan. IFC, Bullet in the Face. Tomorrow, August 16th, August 17th, 3 episodes apiece each night. Watch them live. You're going to watch them on TV. Thursday, here's a perfect night for you. If you don't have diabetes, you order a pizza, some wings. You sit down. You watch a little Bullet in the Face. If you got diabetes, you get yourself some broccoli and some carrots, get some bacon. You can have a porterhouse. Cut her up and watch some IFC. And you're going to want that porterhouse rare, bloody, just like the show. So thank you so much, Alan.
Thank you. See you soon.
I'll talk to you soon, pal. Thank you.
Bye.
That was so classy. That was like the... Chuck, are you going to talk anymore? Are you done? Have you given up on
talking?
That was
pretty good. What? I didn't see the show. I couldn't jump in the conversation.
Oh, no. But you just kind of looked like I was...
I was listening to your good interview.
Am I classy? That was classy, right?
Yes, it was a very good
interview.
I did a good job.
No, that was great.
I think
it was great.
Good.
Some funny stories, too.
I'm glad I was here the whole time.
Plus, I'm like friends with all Andy Kaufman's, all of dead Andy Kaufman's friends. So that's good.
Those are great stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm friends with Ron Zimmerman and Alan Spencer and,
my greatest
Ron doesn't
moment.
Hate me.
Ron's great.
Actually, the last thing Ron said was, I call him Willie B sometimes about Wilford Brimley, and then he said, I sure hope there's money to be made in this diabetes thing.
This is not exactly.
It's a joke. And he goes, not for you, but the Brimster made tons, and he doesn't even have it. So Ron revealed, Wilford Brimley really doesn't have diabetes. He's just making money off it.
Unless Ron's making that up.
I'm pretty positive he's making it up.
Well, Matt, the question is, can you make money with your diabetes?
We're hoping. Keep them crossed, pal. I'm telling you, I wrote that note today, and the headline of that note is, once Brimley kicks the bucket, it's between me and Halle Berry at that point. Now, hold on.
Wait, she has diabetes?
Yes. So now, hold on.
Halle Berry's got diabetes?
Yes, Mikey. Some people can keep it under control.
Some people are born with it, too.
Some people hang out with people two times their sizes, and they gorge a little. I am blaming this, by the way, on use. I did tell Dr. Chen today, I do hang out with people that are 700 pounds. Combined.
And what did he have to say for that?
And we tend to eat a lot. He goes, well, you're going to have to stop that.
When do we eat?
You've been stuffing your face for the last 20 minutes.
As he stuffs a scallion pancake in his face.
As he rushed in here to steal this, whatever
I thought it was an egg roll. Those are almond, almond cookies.
Mikey looks so disappointed to see an almond cookie instead
Mikey
of an
comes
egg roll.
Down the stairs.
Hold on. I did find an egg roll, and it was glorious.
Mikey comes
what
out.
What did I tell you about Lajte Xuan? What did I tell you?
It was good.
Phenomenal.
This is great.
Lenny, was that not some of the best Chinese he had in a while? Yeah. Fantastic.
That's why Lenny spent 30 minutes in the bathroom.
Because you know why Lajte Xuan's so great? I'm going to tell you why. Everything there is home. Like, it's homemade. It's not like the shit they get from that Chinese, like, general factory that everybody gets. Like, they... Oh, Mikey. You just ripped a hole in your pants. I swear to God. If there is not a huge hole outside your ass, I will be shocked. Sometimes I feel like when Mikey farts, it's going to be like one of those Looney Tunes cartoons where there's like a bomb in the guy's pants and then his pants explode. That's what I think just happened.
And Mikey levitates 5 feet.
Lenny's doing the sexy pose against the wall. I don't know what that's all about.
It's because he's getting ready to let one go, too.
All right, so the Chinese was actually really good because everyone's got extreme gas from it.
I just started.
Charles, what do you get when you get Chinese now that you're Mr. Diet and shit?
With the IBS.
With the IBS. Wasn't me this time.
I hate you all.
Yes.
The P90X.
Now that I'm doing P90X on HIV. Beef and broccoli. I'll still get chopped
beef
chewy.
And broccoli. You don't get anything spice with some spice in it?
Orange chicken.
Orange. He just said orange chicken, Caesar. That's fried.
Yeah,
that's awful.
I take the skin off.
You take the. How do you take the skin off of orange chicken?
It usually falls off.
Mikey, where are you for this? Are you listening to him? He's talking about taking skin off the orange chicken.
I take skin off whenever I eat like Popeyes or Brown's.
So
or
you get
too.
Like 500 pieces of orange chicken from Panda Express, and you
first of all,
open
I don't,
each one
I don't
up.
Eat from China. Panda Express. That's fake Chinese food.
Okay. Well, where do you go? Anywhere you go, you get like 50 pieces of orange chicken. You literally open each one of them up and get the chicken out?
Usually the chicken falls right out of the skin, so it's not that much work.
Where do you get your Chinese?
You know what he needs to do?
From 63rd like Central.
Where he needs to go is he needs to go to a good Chinese restaurant.
63rd and Central have any?
He needs to go to a nice Chinese restaurant, but there's actually a lot of chicken inside the breading. Like, there's a couple
yeah,
places
I know
like,
that.
In Chinatown where the breading's real thin and it's all meat.
Well, like we had when we went down there that one time. Remember when I got the... Lenny, Mikey and I, we were talking. Remember when Chinatown, last time we went, I got the generals at the...
Yeah.
And it was real generals.
It was pieces of chicken with a little breading on
little
it.
Little breading.
Yeah, it wasn't this, like, a beer batter that's kicked on
The
there.
Problem with the Chinese is they order the food from that general factory, and they all have that orange chicken or general's chicken, and it's all extremely breaded.
Right, and they deep fry it and then just throw it in a sauce.
Right.
I honestly can't remember the last time I ate
And by the way,
food.
The sauce is the same everywhere, and mm-hmm. that's what's great about Lajte Xuan. All the sauces are original. The sweet and sour is homemade. Everything's homemade.
No, it was
the
great.
Egg roll's homemade, as you probably tasted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't take long, but it was, you know.
It didn't take long for you to taste.
The 30 seconds it was around, it seemed to be good. You know, there's a witch in Oakbrook there.
Oh, how good was that?
There's a witch.
There's also
a block for me.
There's a witch in Naperville too.
Really?
Yeah, it's underground in
Do
block 47.
Do you have the witch? Have you had it?
It's downtown Chicago. Yeah, I've had it.
Oh, it's so good, isn't it?
It's underground. It's under.
Isn't it so good?
Yeah, it's
you
very
can
good.
Have whatever you want.
It
there.
Is. It's, and I've made a couple sandwiches. Very, very good.
Yeah, Mikey, we need to go witch soon.
Absolutely.
I missed witch.
Hey, you know, they got healthy
it's
options.
Diabetes friendly.
Yeah.
No, what we had last time was fine.
Yeah, you just can't have the bread.
No, I can't have the bread if they have a thinner bread. Or if I tear out, like, the insides of the bread. It's low carbs.
No, maybe they got a wrap. You could do the wrap.
The wheat, look, I can have bread as long as it's not a lot of bread. Like, for instance, say I went to Potbelly's,
hey,
and I can say I had a bad meal at Potbelly's.
Let me tell you something. I'm just going to help you out here. You know, with my food culture, if you need to get something that's low carbohydrate, and you obviously keep it a complex carbohydrate, so it's something that I know your body, you said your body can't tell the difference, but trust me.
Chucky just enjoys Terzo diet.
Yeah, well, trust me, Chucky.
Yeah, because it works.
My food IQ is about 400 times what yours is, pal. Okay.
That's because you've tried 400 times more things
exactly.
than I have.
And that's 100% right. 100% right.
But what I'm telling you is go to an Indian grocery store. Sometimes Trader Joe's has it now. But go get yourself some naan, tandoori naan.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's really good.
But what you want to do is you want to get the roti. The roti is the naan made with the whole grains. And when you get it with the whole grains, and they cook it in the oven, so it's grilled, so it doesn't have any oil or fat.
No, I hear you. No,
and you can make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with it.
I agree.
You know, you could heat it up a little bit.
I can have like thin bread, you know, like the flat bread.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
I just can't have like three of them. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like, so today.
Well, that should be good advice for anybody.
Well, no, I'm saying you can't have it at breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You can't have three sandwiches throughout the day. So I went to Potbelly, and we always say how we've never had a bad meal at Potbelly. I had a bad meal at
Potbelly. Did you have the Mediterranean sandwich?
No, but do not get the skinny, ever.
No.
It tastes like cardboard.
It's terrible.
No, I'm talking about the bread.
Yeah, I know.
It's awful. It is terrible. And I don't know what's wrong with this one I went to, but these broads didn't want to work. This broad yelled at me because I made her cut up more mushrooms because they didn't have any mushrooms. I'm like, well, I want mushrooms. And she's like, can you have it without mushrooms? And I go, yeah. And I go, no, I want mushrooms. So she's like, I got to cut them up. So, like, it'll take a little bit. Okay, fine. Go cut it up. It took her like 15 minutes to cut up a fucking mushroom. Like, and she seemed so pissed off when she handed me my bag of food. She's like, here.
You sure you weren't in L.A. for this experience?
No. No, I got to tell you, Mikey, I've encountered, and it's because I live here, obviously, but I've encountered way fucking cuntier people here than I have in L.A.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. Do we even, Caesar, do we even have a Potbellies in L.A.?
Hold on, I got
Caesar, do we even have a Potbellies in L.A.?
No, no Potbellies in L.A. Here.
Witch. Yeah, that's all you need is the witch. I like that Caesar loves the witch. I took him there once, and he was in
witch
love.
Witch is good. They have him here. No,
there's not one in Schaumburg yet, a witch?
There's one in Oak Brook.
No, but I mean by him, close to him.
Here. I got to show this out here. Speaking of Potbellies, you know, though, they got those milkshakes that they do.
Oh, yeah.
And they're pretty good, but I have one problem with those milkshakes. They put that little Salerno butter cookie on there.
You want more butter
cookies. But
they
only give you one.
I know.
So you go to get your shake, and you get one, and you're like, man, this is like being at a strip club. I just got teased. I mean, the shake was good. The shake was good, but I wanted more cookie, you know? So then I always ask for more, and they give you like two or three more, but they're so tiny. I mean,
all right, let me ask you this. Do you want to do some overtime since you haven't been on the show today?
Sure.
Or do we want to go hang out or something?
If we're going to do overtime, I'd like to keep it to like 10, 15 minutes.
10 minutes and then we go hang out?
Yeah,
that's about right. Okay, we're going into overtime right now. So for the final 10 minutes of
download
the show,
it on
15
iTunes.
Minutes of the show, download it on iTunes. Thank you, Alan Spencer, Bullet in the Face, tomorrow night, August 16th, August 17th, three episodes apiece.
That's the only thing she needs.
Leonard, you'll be watching Bullet in the Face because, you know, you have the hookup. And Charles.
Happy birthday.
Oh, and happy birthday to me. And please go get your dicks checked and your blood work done and... Yeah, your love tentacle, as I called it earlier. and be healthy. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Oh, Caesar wants to do Yahoo posts. He likes that new segment. Oh. I read a funny wrestler bumping story today, though. Hold on. These are my favorites.
It's gone. There's nothing.
Charles, were you here when I started doing a segment where I would read off of Deadspin.com the bumping stories where they bump into wrestlers?
Yeah, he wasn't here.
Okay, there's a new story that you have to hear. This is great.
Okay.
It's a Scott Steiner story.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, hold on. I got to find it, though.
Big pop-up bump.
Like
10 seconds.
Oh, good. Everyone knows now they have to tune into the post-game show because they're going to hear the Scott Steiner strip club story.
You know what the best part about it? I'm glad Chucky's here because he's the only person here that knows who the hell you're talking about.
Doesn't matter, though. It doesn't matter because these
Big
stories
Papa
are
Pump,
so funny.
He's the hookup, bro.
Okay, yeah, but this is great. See, the great thing about wrestler stories... The great thing about wrestler stories is you never even have to know who these guys are.
Oh, they're just that ridiculous.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay, for instance, there was a Vince McMahon story where someone bumped into him at Phantom of the Opera in New York. But I got to tell you, there's a Randy Orton one that was, eh. Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu one with Dave Bautista, eh. Here we go.
from Javier. I was at a strip club for my 21st birthday in 2001 in San Francisco, California. It was a grimy joint that Leonard Cannata knows, but my friends wanted to take me there, and a famous porn star was going to be there, too.
Male or female? It is San Francisco.
Female. As one stripper was about to give me a lap dance in the dance room, I noticed a hulking man walk into the room with blonde hair and rocking shades at 1 a.m. in the morning. As he gets nearer, I realize it's freaking Scott Big Papa Pump Steiner. It was around the time his contract with AOL Time Warner expired, and WWE didn't immediately bring him over. Only a few strippers recognized him, and I definitely was the only guy there who knew who he was. Being a huge wrestling fan.
Hold on,
fan
I just want to interject
that.
That's not usually a good sign.
Right. The place had a strict policy of only one dancer per session per person, but he got three of the hottest dancers there all to himself, including the one porn star, at the same time, and they hollered Big Papa Pump to him so everyone in the place could hear. I was a few feet away from him and couldn't help but look his way. Instead of the dancer in front of me, sometimes they don't fix their grammar in these things. But she understood because she recognized him too. After the lap dance I got, I sat there waiting for an open approach to approach the big bad booty daddy, even though I've long heard of his loose cannon reputation. It turns out he caught me staring at him and yells out, "Hey, do you want to fuck me or something? There are other places you can go for that shit." I must have subconsciously been asking for a death wish because I immediately blurted out, "No, man, it's not like that. I just can't believe I'm seeing the Big Papa Pump right here in SF." He stops the dancers and whispers something to them, looking pissed off before he stands up and walks right toward me. I stay seated, wondering what the hell I just got myself into. He stands right in front of me, still with his shades on, and then proceeds to flex. He then says, "Who's the man?" I'm like, obviously you are. You've got the largest arms in the world. He says, "Damn right. You're all right, boy." He sits next to me and says something about being told that these were the best strippers in town, but he's fucked ECW groupies that look better than these hooches. I laugh nervously as I were Ray Liotta laughing at Joe Pesci's jokes in Goodfellas, but he was cool with it. He then gets up to leave, and I tell him I hope WWE picks him up so he can show the world he's the best in the business. He turns around and tells me to stay tuned and then leaves to go to the champagne room. I was about to rejoin my friends and tell them of my encounter, but then the same three dancers who gave Steiner a dance came up to me and told me they were giving a dance to me, and it was on Steiner. He hooked me up. Big Papa Pump was my hookup that night.
I told
you.
He was Big Papa Pump's the hookup.
Now, the last story we read about Scott, though, was some kid was bothering him at a pool, and he goes, "I'm on fucking vacation," and squirted a water bottle in his face.
Not what?
So... my Scott Steiner stories I can never get enough of.
Well, hold on. Now, I do have a question real quick, though. I'm trying to figure out, put my face to the name. Is this the guy that was really, really jacked?
Yeah, really
and
jacked.
He had, like, the tennis balls and his bicep.
Yeah, and you could, he had the blonde hair and the goatee.
He used to be in the Steiner Brothers tag team with his brother Rick and Scott. It was Rick and Scott. They
were
wrestlers from Michigan. Big Papa Pump. He's your hookup. Holla if you hear him.
He used to come out to, like, sirens.
I mean, Chuck, can we be honest? If you and I saw Big Papa Pump at a strip club, we'd be pretty pumped.
Yeah. Well, it's like when I was in Vegas, I went to a strip club, and we found out the Godfather was, like, the manager.
And Disco Inferno used to run the – he used to be one of the guys outside. He is now.
Oh, really?
Whoever Disco Inferno really
is. I wouldn't have cared about Disco Inferno.
No, but
the fact that
really
I would have seen the Godfather at a strip club, I would have went crazy.
Big Papa Pump, I remember who he
is. Yeah, he's the hookup. This is how inconsequential it is, because Lenny and I, when we were at Vegas, one of the strip clubs we went, Disco Inferno was the bouncer. And I never even brought it up to Lenny or said anything, because who the fuck cares about Disco Inferno? But now that I bring that up, yeah, that's how far he's fallen.
When I was in Vegas.
Now a bouncer at the, not the one we went to, not Larry Flint's, Paradise. Paradise.
When I was at Vegas one time, I was in line, and I noticed the person in front of me was Raven. And I'm nudging my buddy. I'm like, "Dude, fucking Raven's in front of us." And I think he heard me. He just kind of looked, but he just didn't pay any attention to us, which was fine, because I've heard some stories about
him. Do you
want to
hear a story about a mother and daughter groupie?
Yes.
This is from Roy.
Wow.
Back in 1999, I attended WrestleMania 15 in Philadelphia.
We just watched that at Cigars and Stripes.
We did. The night before the event, I also attended the WrestleMania Rage Party at the Philly Convention Center. The $80 ticket got me food provided by Chef Boyardee, giant metal buckets full of beefaroni and other foods from the chef, and entertainment provided by such diverse acts as Big Pun, Isaac Hayes, the Cherry Popping Daddies, and Beer Nuts. Okay. The party was shown live on USA Network. Instead of seeing any true superstars like Austin, The Rock, or anybody in DX, we got to meet poor mid-carders, jobbers, has-beens. The Hardy Boys were front and center, with just about everybody on the floor ignoring them. Terry Taylor was there, Rocco Rock, Dr. Death Steve Williams. This guy wound up talking to wrestler Brian Christopher with a group of other attendees. I was being a typical wrestling nerd, bringing up his time in USWA and some other bullshit when two blonde women walk over to him. They interrupted our conversation to introduce themselves to him, and they began coming on to him. Both women were sort of attractive in a very trashy sort of way, and both were drunk or high or a combination of the two. We all watched incredulously as the older woman proceeded to put her hand down the front of his jeans.
Wait, who are they talking about?
Brian Christopher, Jerry Lawler's kid. Yeah. Both women made it known that they wanted to go home with him. The three talked quietly and closely for a bit, and the ladies walked away, still with their hands in his pants, but promised to come back for him at the end of the night. After they walked away, Christopher turned to us and informed us that the ladies were mother and daughter, and they wanted him to join them in his hotel that evening. He seemed quite shocked and amused at what happened. He was fairly composed for a guy who basically got half a handy in the middle of the convention floor. I said something funny to him in response and wound up laughing loudly and high-fiving me. Later in the evening, as my friends walked to the car on the streets of Philadelphia, I saw the two women. Mom was sitting on a curb, and her daughter was trying to lift her to her feet. Both women were laughing hysterically and completely loaded. He doesn't think Brian Christopher took him up on their offer. Chuck and I, with our history, I think we can agree Brian Christopher took him
definitely.
Up on their offer.
Yeah, definitely.
Mother and daughter groupies. How cool would that
for wrestling?
No, it's not really that cool.
For wrestling, that's
unless,
not.
Well, not for wrestling, but if you were like Bret Michaels.
No.
You don't think?
Nope.
What's weird about that for you?
A mother and daughter groupie, that's disgusting.
If they don't touch
Whoa,
each other, it's fine.
It's disgusting.
It's disgusting
awkward.
Because any mother who lets her daughter participate in that kind of
is
thing...
Is a cool mother.
No, she's out of her mind. She should be
well,
slapped.
Well, you tell her that after you're done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe
I mean,
their auntie.
Yeah, when you jizz on her face and it's hanging from her chin and you go, you filthy whore, you shouldn't let your daughter do this, then you walk out of the room and you feel better about yourself.
Nah, that's
then you go
too...
outside, have a cigar, you're fine.
Look, it'd be okay if you were just with a mother and a daughter, but if they're groupies, it just sends it over the edge.
It just sends it over the edge.
But for wrestling, I'm sure this happens every night.
Oh.
Yeah.
What, is there no good Ric Flair stories this
Ooh.
Week? Oh, you missed two Ric Flair stories last time.
Bowls of cocaine?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Who? How old's Ric Flair?
Ric Flair.
61.
61?
62. Yep.
He looks like he's 80.
Well, of course he does. That's
no.
years of hard partying, folks.
Hard yeah. partying and spending too much time in the tanning booth.
Well, that too.
Very interesting article about him a couple months ago.
Yeah,
in
I think it was Grantland.
Yeah, Grantland,
which is owned by ESPN, but about how
Very,
he's broke.
Yeah, and yeah. all the financial and marital problems he's had. Very
now his wife fucked him over, and his ex-wife fucked
and
him over,
and his business partner fucked him over, and
yeah.
everyone fucked.
Well,
him
sometimes
over.
Shit catches up with you.
Oh.
Very interesting article. For those of you interested, you can Google search it and read it. I'm trying to fill dead air.
It is. It's in Grantland. No. I'm thinking of the same thing. I think we should end it here. Oh, wait. Did the White Sox win tonight?
They were up in the seventh.
USB Mexico?
In what? Soccer?
All right. Okay. Let me ask you this.
That what? We're winning?
Can I ask you this?
Yeah, but our team is probably all Mexicans anyhow.
Hold on.
So what's the difference?
Do you really give a shit?
No.
Come on.
Don't care.
I mean, our U.S. team is probably, think about it, there's a reason our team should be better. It's all the Mexicans that can run fast
Mikey,
enough to get over here. And
soccer,
all the slower ones are still in Mexico. So.
Soccer and basketball are on the same level for me. I could care less about either one of them.
Oh, by the way, we were talking about the similarities between Italians and Jews before. Okay, enough, folks. We're leaving. Mikey's here. Yeah, you missed that conversation.
Wait. Say what now?
We were talking about the similarities.
There's not that many similarities.
Here we go.
I got one.
I said that. He disagreed.
They both have noses, but they're different noses.
Yes, they both have all people.
I
want to
press the end button so bad right now, but for some reason I can't. It's like a train wreck.
Why are you asking me about it then?
Can I go back in time for like 5 minutes? By the way, Potbelly's oatmeal chocolate chip cookies, the greatest in the world.
Thank you, folks. Alan Spencer Show, Bullet in the Face, airs August 16th, August 17th, three episodes
apiece. I just want to throw this out here.
Oh,
before you go.
Alex just cut his microphone off.
Before you go, there's a Jewish deli in Naperville, okay? It's called Schmaltz. It's very good. It's the only Jewish deli in this area. Everything else
is
all the Jewish.
I wasn't that big on Schmaltz. I've had Schmaltz.
No, just hear me out here. They have a new...
It's no Manny's.
Well, it's different than Manny's.
It's a deli, yeah.
Manny's is a little overrated, personally.
Oh!
But it's very good, but its reputation is a little more than it is.
Okay, that's true.
What I'm saying is they have a rabbi-approved BLT sandwich.
A kosher BLT.
BLT sandwich, and they house make beef bacon.
Beef bacon. Okay.
They house make the beef bacon, and they instead of mayonnaise they use a sun dried tomato aioli. Okay.
When did you get an iPhone?
I'm in the middle of a conversation
I'm
here,
I'm
and
listening.
You're asking about an iPhone?
I'm continue aioli.
In any event, it's a fucking fantastic sandwich, and you should get one.
I don't know, Mikey, because when I put the sandwich up to my face, I think my big Italian schnoz gets in the way.
You don't have a big Italian schnoz, man.
Oh, I don't. That's good.
That sandwich might not be good for the diabetes.
No, it didn't sound like with the aioli.
Yeah.
There's no sugar in an aioli.
No?
No.
Your food IQ is 400 times more than any living creature, as you stated earlier.
Yes. No, there's no sugar in an aioli. The tomato, maybe.
Tomato's okay.
Yeah, but there's no sugar in that.
Okay. We're going to consider that your apology to the Jews. Thank you, Mikey.
What did I say?
Well, and to
what
the
I
Italians.
Say? What
and
I
to
do?
The Italians. Well, you did make a comment about our noses.
I happen to be Italian. I have a nose, too.
Everyone has
a nose. Really. Matt, are you trying to say Irish people don't have noses? Is that what you're trying to say, Matt?
Irish people have small dicks, Lenny says. Let's see if we can insult everybody before we end the show. What's up next?
How
black
about
people? All right, good night.
The Dutch. How about the Dutch?
Oh, no, end episode.
The Dutch.
End episode.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Goodbye.